Why I keep cutting out. I don't think I'm cutting out right. Tell me if I cut out while I'm talking here. Fencing is a sport of people who do things and they like to stab each other and have right of way. I think it's pretty cool because swords are neat. They're like Zorro. So I like to put on a mask when I fence and put my little mustache on and pretend I'm Zorro. We.
Nope, no cutout.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Elite WTF-FTFW Post-TFCon Podcast Episode 211. This is Vangelis. I am joined by Gog Dog.
Man, I've done like 3 numbered episodes in a row.
I know. You're getting too big for your britches, sir.
I know. I'm catching up to you. Kinda. Oh. Not really. Not even close. Yes, I am.
Entirely. It's making up for all of it right now. Also joining us today is Seth Buzzard.
He's getting too big to fail.
Oh, no.
I'm glad to be back.
Oh, we missed you.
After not really being gone.
Yeah. You know how much we missed you? We talked about you like every 10 minutes at TFCon. I'm not joking.
You did. I'm not joking around. There were lots of people asking why you couldn't make it and expressing their sadness that they wanted to meet you. And they couldn't.
Time and money.
We explained it. Yep. Don't worry. We had your back.
We got you.
I don't have a passport.
Oh, that was my excuse 2 years ago. Try to come up with a better one. Come on.
Do I have to start like yelling about it?
During TFCon, I started making plans about getting a passport, and that's when it was finally like something that was suspected for a while, but finally made apparent that my birth certificate is God knows where. So I have to.
Yeah.
Getting a new birth certificate.
Which is
going to be up to the state of Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I went through the same thing, and it was way easier than I expected it to be. But then again, I live in the state I was born in, so I guess it's easier for me. But I just went down to an office, and I paid like $30, and I had a birth certificate in 20 minutes. So I was really afraid it was going to be more of a pain in the butt.
You're the man who was never born.
Pennsylvania. I'll figure it out.
Best of luck. We want to see you there next year so you can join us in using hashtags and things.
All right.
And carrying around Beast Wars Neo's toys to the bar.
That's right. Tongues.
Yeah, you guys taking toys to the bar. I think
that's weird. That's not something I normally do, but when you can get giraffes to lick beer tap drops, it's worth it.
How did the bartender feel about your giraffe?
The bartenders were awesome.
They were so nice.
For some reasons I can't talk about publicly, but the bartenders were awesome. That's all I'm going to say.
Did pre-order 66 member Ichabod get a firm handshake from any of the lady bartenders?
I don't know.
I think. I know that he forced Crasis to not be sober. In a quite an entertaining way.
Well, I think it was another pre-order 66 member. I think it was Jack Sack tweeted at one point that Ichabod was a ladies' man.
Oh, dear.
And the picture that he attached to it was Ichabod shaking some girl's hand.
That's how we do it in Canada.
All of us that weren't there on Twitter, started by me, I instigated it. Not ashamed to say. Started talking about how the true path to a woman's heart is a stiff handshake. And then we taunted him a couple other times over Twitter via the weekend. I think Pia was involved. I think he was taking enough of his real life away to check Twitter to have seen that. I think, if I remember correctly. Anyway.
This is all new to me.
Ichabod, shaking hands and breaking hearts all over Canada.
Yes, it was a good weekend, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Weekend?
I'm just talking about the event.
Good.
I know.
My TFCon lasted 10 days. I don't know about anybody else.
Yo, you want to go to Kipling Station?
Been there. I've been to Kipling Station hella times.
And then after, you had your own little convention at the Detroit airport, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. Every American who flew back from TFCon got caught 14. In a friggin' hurricane.
Well, the ones that left on Tuesday, yeah. Because it was like, Chris, GM fan, dropped me off at the airport. It was crystal clear, perfect, beautiful day. Like, just sparse white clouds scattered about, but mostly just gorgeous. An hour after I dropped out, it was like a Florida-level monsoon. I'm like, I'm not in Florida yet. What is happening? And my initial flight got canceled. My second, they rerouted me because I was originally supposed to go to Cincinnati. They completely rerouted me to Detroit, but the flight to Detroit got delayed three times for a total of like 2.5 hours. Then I finally made it to Detroit. I stepped off the plane, turned my phone on, and had 5 emails from Delta telling me that it was delayed. Delayed again. Ended up being delayed another 7 hours. I was originally supposed to be back in Florida at about 8:30 in the evening. My plane didn't even take off until 1:30 in the morning. I didn't make it back until 4 a.m.
Oh, God.
So it was crazy. I spent like a total of like 14 hours just sitting in an airport. But that was fun. But well, I got some flight credit out of it, so I'll get to put that towards maybe TFCon next year. No.
Yeah. Well, on Monday, watching on Twitter, Derek Wyatt and Artoni had all kinds of troubles getting home.
They
had all kinds of trouble getting home from BotCon, too. And that's when I said to myself, I will never travel with these two. They are bad luck.
Yeah. I'll tell you more about that later. That was a bad day for everybody.
United.
They are the Bad News Brown, or Bad News Bears of...
Bad News Brown is a WWF professional wrestler.
I know, and he was in my mind because I was talking about him at work the other day. Because he won a silver medal in judo.
They are the Bad News Browns of convention travelers.
So every time they get to an airport, they go, all you sharecroppers. That was Bad News Brown's big diss to the audience, was to call them sharecroppers.
The things we learn.
Yep.
Yeah.
But if anybody who is on the fence about going to TFCon, like, this was my first year and it was amazing. And everyone I know, like, I've been to 4 BotCons, like the last 4 in a row, and I've had some great times at BotCon. I'm not going to try to use this as anything to say that, like, retroactively take away from any of the absolutely amazing weekends I've had there with the people, but this was like all the good parts of BotCon, but none of the stuff that we complain about. Like, and you know, the social aspect of BotCon is still there. It's me getting to see some of my friends that I only get to see once, maybe twice a year, and that's where the fun is. And you know, even if you don't know people, you still know them from the boards, and you can come out and meet and hang out, and you get to meet friends that you'll look forward to seeing again. But this was like all of that, and just none of the stuff where you walk away, you're like, yeah, I had a great week, but, you know, there was this, but there was that. It was all the good stuff.
You don't have people grabbing your badges, walking away. You don't have, you don't have script readings vanishing into the ether. You don't have all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Shattered glass.
Yeah, there's no shattered glass at TFCon. There's no
broken glass in all Toronto.
So,
all the glass was intact.
Yeah, so... Do yourself a favor and try to make it out to TFCon next year if you can, because it's a really good time. So, and I am never planning on missing another one as long as it's in my power for this foreseeable future.
Hooray! That's good to hear. I like TFCon a lot too. But yeah.
Yeah. It's 15 minutes from your house.
Well, half an hour.
Well, if you're in a car. I mean, I guess adds a half hour, but yeah.
No, I mean, like, you know, I just feel bad for all the dudes who had travel problems afterwards, and I don't know. I was sitting there on Twitter and I was going, like, I could write some quip about how that was the result of me pounding my fist on my desk when I saw PR tweet a picture of him holding a green giant, but I just decided not to. Because that would have been in poor taste if somebody's plane had actually crashed. Then I would have been stuck. But luckily, nobody's plane crashed. Speaking of crashing airplanes, I got nothing. We're going to talk about the release of the Fall of Cybertron demo here on WTF and TFW, because it's about Transformers. Have either of you guys played the demo?
I have. I've played both the Decepticon, Autobot, and a few hours of the multiplayer, which is, I think, the core of the demo.
All right, Seth, how about you?
No.
I haven't either, so Gog, it's up to you. Tell us about the demo.
The demo, the single-player parts are pretty short. There's an Autobot section, as I mentioned, and a Decepticon section. The Autobot section, you play as Bumblebee, which is very apparently seems to be from... it's probably the opening level of the game. I think it actually tells you the chapter number, but I forget, because I actually played the Decepticon one first, because the Decepticon one you play as Vortex. I'm like, who do I want to play as? Bumblebee or a freaking Decepticon helicopter? I'm going to play the helicopter. So I actually played the Vortex one first. So it was actually disappointing. I wouldn't recommend that, because then when you go back and play the Bumblebee one, the Bumblebee is actually the tutorial. So after I was already really familiar with the controls, it's like, push this button to jump. I'm like, oh, I should have done this one first. But so definitely play them in order. They're pretty short. And it's a demo, so whatever. And like I said, I think the core of the demo is actually the multiplayer, which actually saves your character, saves your stats and everything. It has a level cap. Most of the upgrades you can unlock are locked out for obvious reasons. But going by the ticker that plays, because it has a little, you know, community ticker that goes just like War for Cybertron did, it sounds like as the days go on leading up to the release of the full game, they're actually going to unlock more stuff in the demo. Yeah. So there's going to be more unlocks available later. At the very least, I saw it mentioned something about raising the level cap. So there is going to be some hooks to keep people coming back in the demo. But there are definitely some changes. I guess I'll speak mostly... Well, some of this will apply to the single player as well. But there's a dedicated button now for switching weapon hands, which kind of... makes the game more of a... It gives it kind of a pseudo cover system now. Because before it was... I guess the weapon was just always on your right hand or whatever. Which, when you're in cover... Or when you're trying to shoot around cover, can be awkward if you're trying to shoot, like, around the left-hand side or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if you hit... Well, I'm playing the PS3 version, but if you hit circle... Your gun actually transforms and then transforms away and then retransforms on the other side. And it's pretty quick. But that way, like, if you want to peek around the left-hand side and then you scoot to the other side, if you want to peek around the corner, you tap the button and then your gun will be on the other hand, so you can kind of shoot around the cover. So you're not actually hitting a button to cover against terrain, but you can do that to shoot around it.
So you're not sticking to cover.
You're able to hug it and shoot around it.
Yeah, so you don't have to walk your whole body out.
Correct.
When you're on the wrong side of a pillar.
Absolutely. And I believe that's at the expense of the grenade button, if I'm remembering, because there are no more grenades, it doesn't appear to be.
No!
They've done some interesting things. The only thing that I've played at, I have to live up to my previous foray in War for Cybertron, but I made it up to, I think, almost... I'm about to hit level 6 as a scientist. I haven't touched the other classes yet. Some notable changes to the scientist class, and probably all the classes, is that you still get two weapons. With the scientist class, though, it's not... let me think. Some of it's a haze. I briefly went into War for Cybertron multiplayer a few weeks ago, but it was only a few games, and I don't remember everything. But I believe you started off with a primary weapon, and you'd have a secondary weapon. So, like with the scientist, you'd get the the 3-shot burst rifle was the one that I generally used. And then my secondary weapon was the heal ray. So, you know, because you got to be a good teammate and heal your people. Because the scientist is the only class that heals. So you should at least, you know, try to heal. It works different in this. The heal as a scientist is a dedicated ability, the heal ray. So it's not a weapon that you have to equip. So you actually have... You get a primary weapon, which in the demo you start off with. It's a It's a automatic weapon. You get this support weapon, which is called an orbital pistol. I think that there was some sort of orbital something in the first game, but it works totally different in this one. It does low damage, but if you hit an opponent with this orbital pistol, they get a little reticule above their head, and you can see them. They're marked, and I think all the people on your team can see them as well. So even if they like run away or go behind cover or run down a corridor, they still have this mark where you can see them and chase them down. It also gives them an armor penalty, and if you continue to hit them with the weapon, they continue to get a greater and greater armor penalty. So as a support class, as a scientist, that can come in really handy because it's a very long range weapon as well. Like you have a very tight reticule when you're aiming, so you can if you see like one of your teammates, if they're fighting with someone, you can hit the enemy from a distance and give them an armor penalty to give your teammates a huge advantage if they're in a one-on-one battle. So that's kind of a cool concept of these of like a support weapon. And you can kill someone with it, but it's like I said, it's kind of low damage. So it's more of you helping out your teammates. The heal ray is not a standalone weapon that you equip anymore. It's like a straight on ability. But you can change that ability out for a sentry, kind of like I haven't unlocked sentry yet. I can't remember what level it is. I haven't gotten that far yet, but you can drop like an automatic sentry that'll shoot. But the cost is that you only get one ability. So at least that's the way it seems. So before you could have two abilities, like you could drop a sentry and you could get like the vampire ability as a scientist. And so that was a common thing that you could do. Like you could swoop in behind, scientists are still the only class that can fly. You could swoop in behind like a battle that was going on. Like say, like your teammates were soldiers and they were engaging other enemies. Like you could fly in behind the enemy, drop a sentry and activate the vampire ability. So they're getting shot from behind. They're getting their energy levels drained from behind while it's healing you. And you're still behind them, so it's kind of a sneaky way to do it. So that's kind of out in this game because you only get what appears, unless it's going to change in the retail version. You only get one ability, so you'll be able to carry two weapons, and then the heal ray is something that you can just activate whenever. But it's a give and take because it's still kind of cool because when you activate the heal ray, you're healing your teammates, but you can still shoot your offensive weapon, which is something that you could not do in War for Cybertron as a scientist. So they've definitely mixed it up a bit. So like I said, I've only gotten to play a few hours, and most of the stuff and abilities are still locked. So we're only getting a taste of it, but whether or not I prefer one of over the other, there are some things I miss, like the grenades and stuff. Maybe like the cool thing about a scientist were the heal grenades, because you could just drop one on your teammates and then you get this bubble where your health is just constantly regenerating. They also have item pickups in the levels as well, and I believe they have them in the single player to some degree, but they have them in the multiplayer. I think I've seen three so far, and some of them were that I recognize, like there's an intercooler where it causes I don't know if it's yours or your whole teammates, because there was a kill streak bonus in War for Cybertron called the intercooler that I think would give your whole team a bonus of their abilities recharge faster. But you can pick up the intercooler as a weapon and activate it with the D-pad. But whether it affects you or your whole team, I'm not sure on that yet, but, there's a Energon regeneration item so that like because just like in the regular game, there are regenerating Energon cubes you can pick up. So if you survive a battle and you're weak, you fly and you can, pick up health. It's a health pickup. But there's the Energon recharger thing so that if, you can keep that as an item. So if you if you're taking damage, you hit it and you get like, I don't know, it's like 20 seconds where your health just constantly regenerates. So they've definitely mixed things up. It still feels like War for Cybertron. But I think in the demo, the frame rate maybe was not as good. On the other hand, like the draw distance and stuff seemed like it might have been a bit better. Like the areas are bigger, like you can see further away. So, and that might just be like a demo thing too. So, but it feels it feels like War for Cybertron, you know, the next step. So I'm trying to remember anything off the top of my head that I else that I really noticed. I didn't really interact that much with the whole Teletran thing in the single player. I found, like, there's constantly, like, these little computer things you can go to where you can buy new weapons. In the single player, at least in the demo, the way it seemed to me is you don't carry two weapons anymore. Like, you don't have, like, two weapons and you can swap them out at any time. It looks like you have one primary weapon, and then you can pick up your second weapon when you switch is a heavy weapon. So instead of having, like, the big turrets, remember how you could shoot the turret and it's unlimited, but you could dismount the turret and carry it around, but you couldn't transform or anything like that, and if you did, you'd have to drop it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that seems to have gone, but now that's your secondary weapon. So you can carry one, like, primary light weapon, and then one heavy weapon you can keep. And I'm not sure if there's like ammo penalties, because the heavy weapons in War for Cybertron, you could never refill them. Once they were out, they were out. But I think in this, you can actually pick up weapon. You can pick up ammo for these now, but they just don't have nearly as many shots. So you have to use them sparingly. And again, well, like,
do you have choice as to what weapons you're taking
in the single player? Yeah,
just well, characters.
I think the character starts with a predetermined weapon. But just like in the single player, as you find weapons, you can swap them out. But you kind of have to be more strategic about it, because you don't just carry any two weapon. You only have one primary weapon, and then your second weapon it can only be from the heavy class. And unless there's something I missed, because when I was playing as Vortex, like, I'm hitting the triangle, and it's not switching weapons. So I'm like, oh, maybe they changed the button in this. So I went to the control menu and looked at it, and it's like, no, that says switch weapons. So, but when I pick up another weapon, I was dropping my other weapons. So it was only letting me carry one. And I'm like, that's weird. But then I found a heavy weapon, and it said equip. It says hold square to equip heavy weapon. So then I actually got my second weapon, but it was labeled as heavy weapon. So you can still carry two weapons, but they've just switched it out. It's like you can carry, you know, one of each class of weapon now instead of any two. So it's a little different. And like I said, there doesn't seem to be any hand grenades anymore. They've gotten rid of those seemingly completely. But otherwise the game feels, you know, really similar. The graphics are better. There's a lot more voice work, it seems, and I've only gone through them quickly, and I don't have the best memory. I'm just playing through. I'm like, oh, it's cool, this is cool, and I wasn't really taking notes. By the time I realized, like, oh yeah, we should probably talk about this. I haven't had a chance to really visit it that much, but
that's fine.
I've been mostly playing in the multiplayer. As of right now, there's only one map, so it's just the same map over and over again. The ceiling is still really low. It almost seems to be lower than before. So if you're playing as a scientist, you can't really go very high. Like, there's this invisible ceiling that is always kind of annoying. And you don't know you hit it until you collide with it. So I wish there was a better way to tell, like, where that ceiling was. So when you're flying around, you just go kling, 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 against air. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. If anybody has any questions, I can answer them to the best of my ability. But that's the stuff that really stuck out for me.
How did you find the character creation in the demo so far?
Okay. The character creation, like, okay, for I'll use what I know. Scientist. With scientists, you start off with two armor sets. You can basically start off as Starscream, or you can start off as Jetfire. And you will basically unlock... scientist is kind of a generic term for flyer. So, like, as you level up, you'll unlock more part sets for other flyer characters, both Autobot and Decepticon. One big change seems to be in War for Cybertron, you would choose an Autobot chassis and a Decepticon chassis for your class. I can't remember who my Autobot chassis was. But my Decepticon chassis was obviously Slipstream. And then you would tweak the colors on top of that. That's changed in that you keep the same chassis in whether you're Autobot or Decepticon. You just choose Bot or Con colors. So if you're randomly placed on the Decepticon team, you'll still have the same chassis. It's just the Decepticon colors that you chose will be activated, and vice versa. So you when you create a character, it's the same character regardless of what team you're on.
And then for each faction, you have like a limited color palette or something.
Right.
So you can just go, oh, my Decepticon is red.
Here's the weird part about that, though. Because like in War for Cybertron, the Decepticon colors were always like purple, green, teal. There was like this methodology. And then the Autobots had more of the primary colors bright yellow. Greens and yellows and blues and reds. It's just all freaking mixed up in this because as somebody had noticed on the boards, and I noticed it as well, the only way, if you choose the Optimus Prime chassis as your, I forget what class it is, because they renamed it too. Like there's no more soldier, there's no more leader. It's now like Titan and something else. But if you choose the Optimus Prime chassis, the only way to get Optimus Prime colors is on the Decepticon palette. so there's no like when you look at a character from a distance in War for Cybertron, you could tell what team they were on just because of the scheme of their colors. In this, it's just all kinds of mixed up. Like there's no like it's just and that's I everybody will probably get used to it as they play. And from what, and somebody had posted to a thread today, where I guess High Moon had also said that there's going to be more color options in the retail version than is in the demo. So, but it's just something that I noticed in the demo. Like there's no more like reds. Reds are only on Autobot, that sort of thing. Like you will see like red and blue Decepticons running around, but the color, those color choices are not. You can't use the same color for either side. So it's kind of strange in that way, but you know, all your teammates always have, you know, markers over their head. So it's not like you're going to be really that confused once you get used to it. I mean, if you see a dude running around and you don't see a name tag above his head, he's an opponent. So you should shoot him.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like not a big deal.
In the 40K Space Marine game, like their multiplayer, I'm trying to remember if there were any color limitations from whether you were Space Marine or Chaos, but you would have to character types, or you would have two loadout characters depending on what side you got sorted to for any given game. But even without the limited or without specifying the colorations, the armor choices were radically different looking. So regardless of color, you could still tell pretty easily if it was a Space Marine or a Chaos player. But if you're saying you could mix and match parts from any character, then they lose that ability of being like, okay, these are the obviously Decepticon jet parts.
And right, because both teams use the exact same parts. So there's no team differentiation between the actual parts. It's only in color. But the only negative to it now is because, well, the part system is still, it's still pretty cool. Like all the Fembot models are gone because they're smaller and sleeker generally. But like those are all gone because they couldn't, I assume, figure out a way to really integrate that in. So like, I don't have the Slipstream chassis anymore for War for Cybertron, which is a shame because I just thought that was such an awesome, sleek fighter model. There's obviously going to be DLC, and there'll probably be DLC part kits and stuff like that. I'm hoping that they'll give you an option just to say, like, okay, like, you can choose this chassis. It's not compatible with the whole build-a-character thing, but if you want to give that up to have a flying scientist and just have a predetermined chassis, then you can do that. I would like to see something like that happen. But it's also cool because like the part system is cool as it is, and even the stuff that's locked out in the demo, you can still highlight it and see what it would look like. Like you could straight up just build put Shockwave's head on Starscream's body and put him in Optimus Prime colors, like so, and you can like all the flyers you can mix and match parts. So It's neat. It's definitely way more involved, and they wanted to make it more than just choose a body and choose a color. So for its pluses and its minuses, I have to give them that, because it's still way more involved than it was in the first game, you know, at a small price. And like, you choose, like, there's like three predetermined voices. Hopefully there'll be more in the retail game, but like, yeah, you choose like the voice that your character speaks in. Like if one of your teammates dies, like, your character will say, like, we lost a teammate. And so it's kind of like a passive way of letting you know that, like, someone behind you may have just been shot dead, so you can turn around and look and see. So that's kind of neat. Any other questions?
Are any of the voices Nolan North?
Probably. I know he's in the credits. I don't know in the multiplayer.
I'm guessing a lot of the things about the demo, too, that may seem a little bit weak, I'm sure can be chalked up to demo-ness for now until we know the
game. Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely not trying to judge it on that. I'm keeping an open mind. I mean, it feels like War for Cybertron, and now they've been working on it for a few more years. So, and they've made some... It's not just War for Cybertron with fancier graphics. Like, they've given characters new abilities, like I said, the whole weapon switching thing. Like, they've definitely taken a critical look at some of the stuff from the first game and tried to improve on it. The only time that I've had I ran into the host migration thing, mm-hmm. and so the game kind of paused, and it literally just says migrating host. But then it migrated the host, and then I think the new host dropped out midway through. So then it did actually dump us back to the beginning. But it's just funny, because it just, in giant letters, it goes host migration. And it's like, now you can't say we don't have host migration, because it's in giant text in front of your face, host migration. So I'll be interested to see that work where multiple people don't quit at the same time and it freaks out. And again, this is the demo, so it'll probably be better in the retail version, at least I hope, but
what's the release for the retail?
August 22nd, I think.
That's not very far away.
Yeah, so nope. 3 weeks.
Like, one thing that was interesting with the multiplayer demo for Halo Reach was they did it so far ahead that they actually used a lot of what happened.
Yeah,
demo.
Well, that was more of a beta, though, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But your point
stands. Like,
yeah, but so I was going to say, unfortunately, once this is so close, you know, maybe some stuff will get tweaked based on how people are playing in the demo. But I don't know if there's going to be time to do anything.
Grandiose. We'll see. They like in their community ticker, like, they say, like, you know, thanks for all the videos and stuff, and they want to see more. Well, I guess they're encouraging people to, if there's something they want the devs to see, to, you know, record it and put it on YouTube and send it to them. So they seem to be open to that. So at least according to that stuff, it's in the demo and in scrolling text saying thanks, keep sending us that. So that seems neat. And they say they're saying, like, if you find cheaters, report them, because they are actively banning them now and they're looking for ways to patch that stuff. So I was a little surprised to see that, because you don't usually see, like, here's a demo for the game. Oh, hey, we're acknowledging the fact that people are cheating. Please tell us about it. So,
yeah, like, the reason I didn't get the demo is, like, I downloaded the Mass Effect 3 demo and I started playing it, and I realized, why am I playing this now when I'm just going to be playing the whole game soon, and I'm getting this slice of it out of context? I'm not interested in that anymore. So I didn't realize that there was multiplayer in the demo also.
Yeah.
For a Fall of Cybertron. But even still, I think I'm just going to wait till the whole game comes out. And also because I can't stop playing Mass Effect's multiplayer. And the only time I have since Mass Effect came out, the only other game that I've really played was the Walking Dead game, which is amazing.
Yeah, I've heard that from everyone, so I'm gonna have to dive into that later in the year. But no, I mean, I'm happy with what I've seen. I loved War for Cybertron's multiplayer. It wasn't perfect, but I had a lot of fun playing it. So this is bringing back fond memories. I'm still needing to feel out the differences. It was a little confusing at first because of those differences, but as I've gotten used to it, I think it'll be fine. And yeah, we'll see. But I'm enjoying it. You know, I think about the only thing I can think of right now is I hope that the hope the frame rate improves in the retail version. I think that's really, and it's not negative. I'm still having fun playing it, but it is kind of like, yeah, this could be better. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's fun so far.
I'm glad to hear it's been overall positive. I mean, and it's nice that they threw in multiplayer on the demo again. It's I think that makes demos more interesting than, as Seth said, being just a slice of the game. Because
yeah,
if there was no multiplayer in the demo, I think I'd probably just skip the demo because I'm in the same position. I already know I'm going to play the game.
Exactly. So yeah,
I don't need to know what the single player is like.
Yeah, and like here's a level out of context.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that.
I don't need that. I'm already all in. So just show me what you got.
Show me the money.
Show me the money. Nice. So it's August 22nd, 23rd-ish. Look forward to War for Cybertron's sequel, Fall of Cybertron. See how smoothly I corrected myself there? That was super smooth. I keep calling it War for Cybertron because I'm so used to saying those syllables.
Would have been more smooth if you didn't then start talking about how you made the mistake and then caught yourself, and you just couldn't resist people knowing how clever you were.
And yeah, I keep making praise. The same mistake too. I was downloading I was going to download the demo because I didn't even realize that the demo was out yesterday, and then I kept seeing people tweet about it. I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm home from work. Let me check out the demo. So I'm looking in the demo. I'm in the PlayStation Network store. I go into download or A to Z. I click on whatever section includes T, and I'm going through, and then I see Transformers: Fall of Cybertron. I'm like, no, I want the new one. And I'm like, wait, Fall of Cybertron, War for Cybertron. Dang it! So I keep doing the same thing. Whenever I see Transformers something something Cybertron, I have to pause for a minute and I'm like, wait, okay, which one's the old one, which one's the new one? I keep forgetting.
Cybertron of Cybertron.
Yeah.
Transformers Sabertron of Cybertron. That'd be crazy. Alright, well, we'll be back once again in a few weeks, probably in time for the game's release, to talk more about Fall of Cybertron. In the meantime, let's go into something a little bit more open-ended with some new picture picks. Seth Buzzard, tell me about your new picture picks.
I completely didn't even think to look for a new picture pick.
Excellent.
I've never been so completely unprepared for pick picks.
That's the best time for pick picks. Shall I give you some time to...
I can go. I can go because I'm a good student.
All right.
Were talking about other stuff before we started, and I just didn't even think of it.
Gog Dog, what's your new picture pick?
Never mind. We've been without Seth for a while, so I'm not going to give him a hard time. He already feels bad enough. This is news that popped up while we were at TFCon.
Yeah.
We were at TFCon.
Figma Avengers.
No, not that. But action figures nonetheless. In a very surprising move, at least to me, we got some new information about upcoming Transformers Gotokuru figures, which is like awesome because that means they're going to continue to visit the Transformers license, and I think that is really rad. And hopefully, that means that the ones they've offered so far have been successful enough. All one of them. I'm still waiting for that Jinrai pre-order. I don't know where it is, but I hope that goes up soon. But in a bit of a bittersweetness, they are abandoning Master Force and actually going to older G1. And they are going to, it looks like they are going to be releasing Spike and Daniel in their exosuits, which were in the 1986 movie. The silhouette we see, like it shows a silhouette of an exosuit. We see a silhouette of Daniel. Oh, we see a silhouette of Adult Spike. And then we see a silhouette of a vehicle mode. So are these going to transform? Probably.
Yes.
And that's nuts.
Because CM's Corp have done transforming toys. Now, there's a small bummer in here. The worst toys that CM's toys have ever done are their transforming robot toys.
Like, yeah.
That's the bottom of the barrel of their releases in my experience. So this could go either way because their Gotokuru stuff has apparently been pretty much awesome all around the board. Because I think Minerva's great, and from what you've told me, Noriko's better. So I don't know what to think.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But I'm just pleasantly surprised that we've already gotten new information of that they're going to stay in the Transformers line. These figures are going to have way more mass appeal than Minerva and Jinrai, at least in the West. So if these do well, hopefully stay. Now, oh, wait. Let's see. Wait here. Let me see. Because I'm looking at the picture we got, but it also says Brave, and isn't that
That's Brave Gokken.
Brave Gokken.
Yeah.
So I'm one like,
Brave Gokken is their transforming robot and non-transforming robot line.
I know. So I'm wondering is this actually? I'm just wondering has this been misreported? Is this Guto Kuru at all? Or no? I bet I know what this is, and this is just me thinking this out loud, but I'm guessing that the suit, the Excel suit, is going to be Brave Gokken, and the figures are going to be Guto Kuru.
If you can remove the figure from the exosuit, I'm going to be really surprised.
You obviously can. I mean, going off these silhouettes, because they did a very similar thing with their reveals for Minerva and Jinrai. They did silhouettes of the figures that we were getting. So they're showing this here. It shows Daniel and Spike separately. It shows the suit in the middle and then a vehicle mode. So I'm guessing that the suit is going to be Brave Gokken and the two figures are going to be Guto Kuru.
That's so kind of legit exciting.
That it kind of is, yeah. And that didn't dawn on me until just now when I saw the Brave Gokken.
I don't know how I never noticed this. I think my eyes were just blurring it together. I kept thinking all the silhouettes were in exosuits somehow. I was just like, yeah, it's the exosuit. It's the exosuit. Well,
when we saw this, we were waking up from party until 5:30 in the morning. So I haven't really taken a closer look at it until just now when I needed a new pick. But yeah, I did not notice the Brave Gokken logo until now.
Yeah, me neither.
So that's kind of cool. So this is probably actually going to be three releases.
I just hope that it turns out better than my previous experiences with transforming Brave Gokken.
Yeah, I agree. At the very least, though, we'll probably get some really cool Spike and Daniel figures.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And on the bright side, Brave Gokken's, like, the parts of them that don't work are in the transformation engineering. I'm sure if you just leave it alone, it'll look good in at least one mode. I'm sure it'll actually look good in both modes. Because especially if this is really like a cross in inner line release, I'm going to guess they're going to put their absolute all into it. And I really hope it comes out in a fashion that reflects that. Seth, are you the kind of person who'd buy an exosuit or Excel suit?
I don't know. I mean, from like the video GOG did for Minerva. Is it Minerva? Am I screwing up the names?
No, you got it right.
Okay. It does look like they're doing some really cool, interesting stuff. And this does look pretty well made. But they haven't done characters yet that I'm really ready to jump in on, and that Spike and Daniel aren't really going to be them. I think they're doing great stuff. It's just, it's not what I'm into right now.
That's fair. I mean, it's expensive, so it's hard to justify spending $80-$100 on something that you're only iffy on. So, but I think as far as the fandom at large, these are going to have more of a mass appeal.
They're way more recognizable. It's a design that pretty much everybody is going to be familiar with, where like the Master Force stuff is a little more, you got to seek it out kind of a deal. And yeah. So, you know, I think it's all cool. It's just, it's not what I'm after right now.
All right. Yeah, I just want to see. I want to see prototype pictures. I want to see what the mechanisms look like for transformation, and I want it to work.
Did you have you talked about getting Minerva yet, Chris?
I didn't talk very much. Yeah, I think it's in 208. Okay. I know I talked about it. I basically said like I echo your sentiments from your own feedback in the video you put up. I actually said like, you know, if it wasn't for your video, I would be stuck because there are parts of my Minerva I would not know how to work. Because mine had a few little problems. I had to do a little bit of shaving to get the ab crunch to work properly. The plastic had some very unfortunately placed mold flash that was preventing the motion from working. And because of that, and also I popped a shoulder out immediately trying to work the shoulder joints. And if I didn't see your video showing how the figure breaks down on the internals and how that's not actually all that hard to do if you need to take a look inside, I would have been stuck. I'd have been like, my Minerva's busted and I have no idea how it works. So many thanks for the video.
Give yourself some credit. I'm sure you would have figured it out in all of 10 seconds, but
I don't know. I mean, that stuff, it's not, I'm, like I said, when I watched your video, it's like, when I see a humanoid figure that's posable, I just think, oh, it must work like a Figma and or a Figuart. And Guto Kuro does a lot of things in a very unique way compared to that mindset.
Are you interested in the Jinrai at all?
Yes, I am. Okay. I actually am even more interested in the Jinrai because I want to see if they can take this joint system and apply it to a male body as well as they have a female body. Because there are differences that may come into play, and there are things that may actually be strengthened even more by their joint system if they do things right. So I'm pumped. I can't believe a pre-order isn't up yet. I keep assuming there is one, and I just missed it. That's really weird.
They just put up the Motoko, like, I don't know, a month ago. So he should be. I'll be surprised if we don't see him this month.
But, I want to see more of that stuff. And it's... Small bummer is now we don't have any more conventions for a while, so whatever I see is going to be... We're out of that season where I can hope to see things in person. So, I'm trying to cut back my pre-orders, but he is one that I may end up adding to the more limited list I've been running. We'll see, though. Seth, do you have a new pick yet?
Yes, I found two that are related.
Very
closely related. I don't think you can mention one without the other. I think it would be a disservice to the listeners to mention one without the other.
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to do both as a unit.
Good.
TFC Toys. Uranos? Is that how we're pronouncing that?
I say Uranus. I say Uranus because it messes with Uranus. All the people that say Uranus.
Uranus.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Transformers.
Anyway, Eagle and Phantom look incredible. And something that I think is interesting is where the Hercules, all the individual limbs were like $100 each. These guys seem significantly cheaper.
How much are they running?
They're 80 bucks on Robot Kingdom.
How much were the Hercules limbs on Robot Kingdom?
I don't know.
I think they were 80.
Big Bad Toy Store is 100 bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, the general consensus at the general initial reaction at TFCon was they're the same price. So it may just be the difference in the retailers.
Oh, the retailers. Okay. So. Well, so looking at the jet modes, you kind of see the Phantom from a little more of an angle. All the pictures of Eagle that they have on here are very specifically kind of looking down at the fuselage. So you don't really get a chance to see what the underside looks like. And that's where a lot of jets, transforming jets, lose it. Is just like, oh, there's a bunch of robot hanging off the bottom of this jet.
Yeah.
But at least from these pictures, it looks like they do a pretty damn good job of not just having a bunch of robot hanging off the bottom of a jet. They look pretty darn good, which I think is a major plus. I'm impressed. I'm pretty impressed with these guys.
I want to get my hands on them. I am sitting here going like, it's almost like, and I know the Hercules cycle now, so I'm sitting here going like, I know that it's not like I won't be able to get them later, but as individual robots, I'm more fascinated with jets than I am construction vehicles. So now it's happening like in the inverse way, where I want to just see what these guys look like one by one.
Well, after I had decided on this as being my picks, I found pictures of the Hercules team, and I just think these flat out look better. They look way better as robots than the majority of the Hercules team, and they look more like actual jets than any of the Hercules parts look like actual construction vehicles. Like I think they've way, way, way stepped it up with these guys. Like, they look really good.
And as they needed to. What with, like, Make Toy and Perfect Effect. Not Perfect Effect, sorry. Make Toy and Mastermind and Fans Project all throwing their hats into the combiner ring. TFC, I think, did need to step up things to not get lost in the shuffle. And
It's not just good enough to be the biggest one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even if they weren't a combiner team, if they were just doing two transforming jets and they didn't turn into limbs or anything, I think they look amazing. Just from these, you know, gray prototype pictures and not being able to see all the angles on the jet, so maybe they look ridiculous from below. But so far, I'm really, really impressed with these things. I think they look great.
I am digging them. I'm trying to figure out if I actually want to buy them right away. But that's only because of wallet fatigue. Seth, are you thinking of throwing down pre-orders?
It's kind of like with Hercules, though. Like, I have to consider how many of them there's going to be and what the total cost is. Because I don't want to start if I'm not going to finish. So I'm going to have some soul searching to do as I decide if I want to invest in this sort of a thing.
And unless they drop some info, we're kind of flying in the dark as to what the hell Silver Bolt's going to be. Like, is he going to also be $100, or will he be bigger? Like, I don't know.
Well, because that's where Hercules had the advantage, where all the individual parts could be kind of the same size with each other. Because there's one more.
Yeah.
In that Devastator way. I mean, Silver Bolt is going to have to be bigger. Unless they add another jet. And I think he should be bigger. Because where all the others are fighters, he was like an airliner.
Yeah.
Or, he was kind of based off of the Concorde. But not really accurately, if my memory serves correctly. I hope Silver Bolt's bigger. And thus more expensive. But, I mean, if then the price just equals out, then I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No,
I don't expect them to be bigger and the same price.
Yeah. And I'm actually, that's what's piquing my interest the most about that set, is to consider, like, how they're going to do a set with four smaller guys and one big guy. I'm interested. I think it's not going to be quite as hype-ridden and exciting as Hercules, because now we have plenty of examples of third-party combiners and the combination actually working. So that whole aspect of the excitement of, will this even work? Will they actually release all the different parts? Like, that's kind of gone now, and it's kind of the city commander syndrome of, like, this is so amazing up until it comes out, and once it comes out, it's like, well, this is what the bar is, so I'm not excited anymore. I just want to see something that's better. I'm also curious how the discussion threads on TFW and other places will be about this thing. Yeah. Gog, do you have any interest in Uranus?
Yeah. I'm not even going to validate that with a acknowledgement.
You just did!
I said too late before you did, so I still win. Oh. I don't know why I don't want to go out and get a Hercules, because I've, like, seen them in person now and they look awesome, and I've held them and they just seem just beefy, meaty. Like, even the individual figures are just solid. Like, they feel awesome. Like, I even transformed some of GM Fan's individual, because I think he bought the first two, and I was like, yeah, I haven't actually transformed these yet, so I was messing with those. And
he still only, like, has the first two.
Yeah, he's weird. But he but
they're,
like,
not Ultra Magnuses, like, so I don't care.
Yeah. But like, they seem to be really well done. Like, they're even good standalone toys for the most part. But it's just, and I like Devastator. Like, Devastator is awesome. Like, he is, when you think of combiners, like, you think of him. Like, he is the poster child for transforming, combining robots in the Transformers franchise. But I just haven't been compelled to actually spend money on it, but I have no I have no personal attachment to Superion, but, like, the whole jet thing it does seem interesting to me. So I don't know. I might actually start delving into these guys in pre-order. But a part of me wants to think like, well, maybe I should wait for them to do a combiner that I am like super excited for, which, and then that brings into quick play, like who that would be. And like, the only thing that I could think of off the top of my head would probably be Predaking, but then we have the Mastermind Predaking. So Mastermind hasn't done a combiner yet. So TFC is established, and so I don't have any doubt that if TFC does the Predaking, it would turn out awesome. But will they do one now that Mastermind is doing one? And so there's a lot of questions. So I'm not sure, but I am more interested in grabbing a Superion than I am a Devastator, I think, and for reasons I can't explain to myself at all, because I think I have way more attachment to Devastator. But I think just on a strictly toy level, I think it's just like what you said, like looking at the Jets and seeing how well they're done. Like, they just look really incredible. And I think just the fact that they're Jets versus like dump trucks, but that's never a conscious differentiation I've made when it comes to purchasing before. So I have no idea why I feel the way I do. And I've been thinking about this for months, because, you know, both with Make Toys Giant, Maquet or whatever, and the Hercules, it's like I've had plenty of time to ponder like why I'm not rushing out and picking these up, because I don't think there's anything wrong with them. I think they look great, and I just have not had any compulsion to drop a dime on them.
I felt so bad I didn't give you a better look at the two Devastator ones when you were here. We just kind of like lost track of them, with all the stuff going on.
I thought most of my vacation was going to consist of me sitting on your couch and trying to find things to do. And that was not what happened.
No,
like I did not. From when I landed in Canada to when I left, like there was no time to breathe, not a single day. So maybe one day there was a kind of a slow day, but other than that, it was just like, let's go.
That was Gears of War 3 day.
Yeah. So, but you know, maybe the next time I'm up there, I can mess with your Make Toys Giant.
Yeah.
Because I kind of really want to go back and do the stuff that we didn't have time to do last time. But whatever, it's another conversation. But yes, I am probably going to be kind of interested in this, and I need to decide at some time whether I want to start dropping the money on it once pre-orders go up.
Well, and at TFCon, somebody showed the first two of a Stunticon set, right? Who showed that?
That was Fans Project. What I was hearing was the Stunticon limbs are going to be Causality figures at $50 a piece, and the central piece is going to be a Crossfire release, and we'll have all the combiner bits, whereas the other guys are going to be released in a more bare-bones style for $50 a shot as standalone car transformers.
Yeah, there's no way I'm going to be able to pass up that. Menasor has always been my favorite combiner.
They were gorgeous too. Their joints were all super glued, but we got to pick up the gray prototypes and just look at them, and the proportions were magnificent.
Yeah,
and they were saying Motormaster is going to be much bigger, right?
Yes. Yeah, there were cell phone pictures floating around that I don't want to overstate, because they're my recollections, and my recollections are going to make them sound better than they actually were. But he had a box around his head, and he looked like Menasor in a picture, and he looked like a big truck with a trailer in another picture.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah. I am.
Me too.
Number one, it's Fans Project. Number two, the cars are even more appealing to me than the Jets for some reason.
And Menasor is my first combiner. I have to do it.
Number three, it's Fans Project.
Yeah.
Which was the same as my number one. I know. And if I remember correctly, the Motormaster's trailer is not actually going to be part of the combination. It's just going to be like the storage for all the parts, right? I think that's what Jared said.
I heard nothing along these lines, so I'm going to stay out of speculation on that. Jared would know better.
I think that was front paged.
Okay.
And I think Jared got credit for that. And he was our roommate, and we didn't ask him, so that's weird, but whatever.
Yeah.
So
Well, you know why we didn't ask him? Because whenever we were actually in the room, except for the one time that you weren't there and me and Aaron were cutting ourselves with third-party toys, we were all really, really tired. So it didn't occur to us.
And I think the one time I wasn't there, it was because of the water slide. Is that correct?
Yes. Handstands. Okay. Are you drowning?
Yes. You had to be there. I'm sorry. Sorry, Seth. I'll explain more after we're off mic.
I don't want to hear more.
No, you'll like this.
No, really.
No, you want to hear this.
No, really.
Yeah. You really do. Anyway.
Anyway, back on topic. I like the idea of Motormaster having his trailer as part of his body. But
The picture I saw that included a combined form head, I thought there were trailer bits in a box behind the head, but now I'm not sure anymore. Well,
even besides being part of Menasor, Motormaster himself, trailer, cab, all becomes one big dude. I like it.
Me too. That's one of
the things I like about the original figure.
So anyway, third party was very exciting this weekend. And it's a bummer because the Hasbro table where you usually get to play with stuff basically just had a whole lot of Creo, which you can't really play with in a short period of time other than picking it up. So a lot of this news did kind of steal the show. And my problem with new Pick Picks is that I'm looking around at everything and I'm like, did I talk about this already before? I wasn't prepared now. I got so enthralled in myself.
Ew.
Oh, right. I wanted to talk about this. So ARMS Micron Gashapon is doing even more show characters as Micron versions of themselves that turn into things. So we've got Ratchet, Wheeljack, and Starscream. And then the fourth one is going to be two different color variations on a dragonfly that I'm going to guess turns into some kind of gun, but we don't know. Ratchet is called Ratchet Spanner, and it's Ratchet who then folds himself into the shape of a spanner. Wheeljack is called Wheeljack Kunai, and it's Wheeljack who turns into a kunai dagger. And then the one that I'm finding the most amusing is Starscream Boomerang, which is Starscream who turns into a boomerang. I like that because I like the idea of a robot who turns into a boomerang and does nothing to try to help the whole, like, throw the boomerang and it comes back to you thing. Like, ideally, a robot boomerang would always work because it could just, like, use its artificial intelligence and thrusters and things to fly back to you. But maybe, like, the Starscream Micron doesn't give a crap. So he's like, yeah, you better throw me right, or I'm just going to bounce to a rest across the room and you're going to look silly. I also just like the idea of these really goofy show characters turning into things for themselves deal. None of these are as good as the Bulkhead Knuckle, but Ratchet Spanner did make me smile. Also, the ARMS Micron Gashapons have been surprisingly fun, the first series of them, with the Prime and the Bumblebee and the Gecko and the Snake. So I think I'm all in on these if I can get them for the same good deal that I found the other ones for, of like $3 to $5 a Micron. Seth, you got first Gashapon Micron set. How are you feeling about the future ones?
I think they look interesting, but the Microns that come with the full-size figures seem, from what I've seen in pictures, much more elaborate than the Gachapons. Am I right in this assessment?
Yes. The ones that come with the figures are a little bit more sturdy and have a few more moving parts, and of course have stickers that make them look more interesting.
Yeah, and I had kind of assumed that's what the Gashapons were going to be like, so I was a little disappointed with what actually showed up. So, even when I ordered these, I wasn't really thinking like, oh, I'm going to be a completist. So, as of right now, I don't think I need any more. But I saw the listings at Big Bad in their pre-orders. And it looks like with these upcoming waves, they're going to sell them in smaller batches, which are more affordable.
Yeah, not like 600 pieces or whatever it was.
Well, what I got was 10.
Oh, 10?
It looks like, yeah. And I don't know what wave two is, but like the listing for wave three was, I think, a 6-pack.
So that sounds like a one of each. So that's even better.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'll go. Probably not.
Okay.
I don't hate them. It's just, I got these first ones. And they weren't quite what I was hoping them to be. And I feel that for myself, the itch has been scratched.
Okay. Yeah, I'm, I don't know. After I got that first set of them, I was sitting there going like, man, I kind of enjoy these. So I can see what happens. On the bright side, I doubt they're going to be hard to find on the aftermarket. They are convention toys in every sense of the word. They're the cheap things you'll find at conventions in bags altogether, often for a pretty decent price because they're tiny. So I might just wait till the next convention and just binge on them. Anyway, new pick picks aside, we also have some voice actor news. Apparently, something came out from post-SDCC news from Comic Book Resources. It sounds like Nolan North mentioned that when he was working on Fall of Cybertron and Transformers Prime, he was honored to watch Greg Berger and Peter Cullen work both on the project. So we knew that Greg Berger was Grimlock in Transformers Fall of Cybertron, so maybe he's also Grimlock in Transformers Prime, or maybe he's playing somebody else in Transformers Prime. We do know that there is that Prime Season 3 lead-in comic about the Dinobots, which kind of makes me think that we can start connecting the dots here. But, Gog, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? It's interesting. It would be cool to see him as Grimlock back on television. I mean, he's done Grimlock and other things, but I don't think he's done a TV Grimlock since G1, right?
Nope. Absolutely not.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's cool. I mean, in like a fan-wanky way. So, we'll see. I mean, it seems... I'm trying to remember. Like, I remember the whole lead-in comic thing, but somebody was making it a point. I can't remember if it was Hasbro or The Hub or whoever, but somebody was making it a point, like, oh, no, this isn't the show. It's just a little standalone thing. So maybe, I don't know. I don't know whether that was someone trying to just
stop the
rumor mill or what.
But the comic said Transformers Prime, like, something of the Dinobots on it.
Right. But then there was some sort of official statement basically saying like, oh, well, this is just kind of a backstory. It's not, this has nothing to do with an appearance on the show necessarily. So I don't know, but if this is true, it's exciting for me just for the fact that it's more characters turning up in the show. So, which, you know, that's a good thing. Cause I've enjoyed Prime for the most part, but like, the cast is pretty small, and I wouldn't mind an increase in it, so... And maybe it'll actually give the show some plot, so that'd be good.
Mm.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, no, I think it's good. I would like to see the Dinobots show up in the show. I think it would add something to the show in a positive way.
All right. And, Seth, do you want to see some Mr. Burger in Transformers?
No!
Oh, crap. I set him off.
No.
He hates the idea of Greg Berger in Transformers Prime.
I want Greg Hot Dog.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, why not? Greg Berger is an accomplished voice actor, regardless of prior involvement in Transformers. He's done tons of stuff. Yeah, I think it's an easy assumption that he'll be Grimlock. Now, hopefully he'll get to do other voices, too.
Yeah.
I was going to say, hey, it'd be nice if they didn't have Grimlock. But, you know, they'll probably have Grimlock. And I don't really think it would be nice not to have Grimlock. But, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, if Fall of Cybertron's coming out, Grimlock's a big thrust of that. That's going to be getting Grimlock more attention. So why not have Grimlock in Prime? Everyone loves Grimlock anyway. So, if they do, I mean, if that's what this is all about, like, Grimlock's going to be in Prime, and they didn't have Greg Berger do it, then, you know, people would complain.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it just seems like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a logical move.
Yeah. And, like, you know, I think the only thing that stopped people from getting too upset that David Kay did Grimlock and animated was that it's because it's David Kay, and people couldn't really bring themselves to be mad at David Kay.
Well, you can't, really. He's too nice a dude.
Right.
And if you do get mad at him, then he's just going to he's gonna push you.
Like, people are, oh, why didn't they get Greg Berger? Oh, it's David Kay. I can't incite his ire.
David Kay, I can't, David Kay!
I've David K'd all I can. I can't David K anymore.
No! So we'll see how that turns out on the show, but I thought it was worth bringing up because,
all these David K's.
Too many David K's! I'm tired of all these David K's in my David K soup.
Dun, dun.
This is a retroactive spoiler warning. Dun, dun. Oh, jeez.
Huh?
Anyway, guys, we have a listener question from Triceridon.
Oh, I love those.
All right. Triceridon writes in with, Guten Abend to the esteemed crew of the TFW 2005 Podcasting Union of WTFery. I send greetings from the distant past of April 16, 2012 in hopes of you answering a pair of questions of mine. And if North Korea has somehow managed to conquer the world, then long live the glorious leader. That's covering your bases. Question number one. What other historical periods would you like to see in a hypothetical Transformers Evolutions stories, i.e. Hearts of Steel? Myself, another jaunt through the Second World War couldn't hurt, or perhaps Ancient Rome. I would love to see Ancient Rome Transformers that can do all the crazy, like, chariot race stuff with, like, spikes coming out of the wheels and things. FYI, for those who don't know, Transformers Evolutions is basically just Hearts of Steel. The idea being Transformers re-evolution imagined in different settings. So yeah, Rome would be cool. I would love to see them in the Renaissance with, like, crazy stuff like Leonardo da Vinci's flying machine and things like that. Seth, what's the period you like to see Transformers get popped into?
Well, you gotta consider it has to be an age where there were vehicles for them to become. So that really narrows down the time frames, and there's not that much difference between some of these ages or slivers of time. And, like, you could base them around wars. I mean, that's kind of like World War II had a style that World War One didn't. Mm-hmm. And then you get more fanciful with the Renaissance. Hearts of Steel is kind of industrial age, steampunkish already, so that's covered. So there just isn't really that much room. Like, I was going to say jokingly, like, the Stone Age, but that's Beast Wars, so never mind.
Oh. They already did that.
Yeah, I don't know. They've done... Wasn't there something where it was kind of medieval in the past already?
There was... I think it was Beast Wars, like, mythological masters or something. Like, they were going to turn into creatures of myth. But I don't know if that was a fan thing or if that was an aborted Hasbro idea.
It seemed like some sort of siege equipment design. Maybe it was just somebody's fan art. Mm. But that was another idea I was going to throw out there. Like Greek mythological beasts or something. So you have, like, a chimera and a centaur.
Yeah. A centaur that turns into a horse. It's the new mock kick.
Yeah, like a Roman, like you said, like Roman. So you have, like, that sort of era of design. And then the robot modes could be inspired by Roman gods, like Mars and Jupiter and all that stuff.
Oh, that would be cool. Like, if their robot modes were, like, referencing, like, statues of gods that were, like, if they scanned god statues and things and whatnot, that'd be kind of cool.
And then they turn into something lame like a chariot.
Yeah. Clop, clop, clop.
I am Zeus, and I turn into a chariot. I'm Zeus Convoy, I turn into a chariot.
Zeus Convoy.
Zeus Convoy. Oh, gosh.
Dog Dog, what would your answer to this question be?
I think you guys covered, like, the majority of anything that could be done as far as different eras of machines. He said in the question, he mentioned World War II, and, like, that would always be cool. I know Dreamwave did that, but, like, I wouldn't mind seeing that. And it's kind of a shame that this didn't happen, because, like, his hypothetical Transformers Evolution, that was the whole purpose of it to begin with, is they were going to have multiple kind of what if stories.
Like, yeah.
And they just never revisited it.
But I constantly forget that that's what Hearts of Steel's, like, subset was.
Yeah, and they were pimping it before the first issue of Hearts of Steel came out, that this was only going to be the first foray into this, like, what if the Transformers woke up or landed on Earth in this other time period. So, like, they seemed to be excited to revisit it, and it just never happened. But, no, like, the World War II thing would be really cool. Maybe, like we saw, like, the whole train thing, but, like, what if we got away from the trains even in the same era, maybe a little after, in the early 1900s, and, like, Model Ts and stuff like that? It would still be kind of steampunky, but it would be more of an urban thing, like the auto carriage or whatever, but not, like, train tracks and stuff, but
like those old Seeker designs from Revenge of the Fallen and whatnot.
Yeah, for sure. You could do medieval times, except for it would just be like Metroplex would turn into a castle.
Oh, you know, Castleplex, like, would be so cool.
Yes, or like, you know, like a Fort Max, like
Megatron would just be a cannon.
Yeah, so you could have catapults. Catapult formers. Or Soundwave could be a catapult, and he could catapult his tapes.
His tapes would hate their job, though.
No, yeah, but they'd be
boulders.
They'd be rock lords, and they'd be like siege experts, and like infiltrate. It would be infiltration, and then like Soundwave would shoot the catapult, and then like Frenzy would, you know, he'd bust through the wall, and then transform into a human sized dude, and then like infiltrate from the inside,
and wreck everything.
Yeah, and that would be kind of the same theme of that, but yeah, that would be hard to make a story out of it. There could be some cool concept art out of that, but outside of that, I don't know how it would work. But
bummer, I think that's kind of what happened to Hearts of Steel.
Yeah.
Well, I was just trying to think about Roman times some more, and like, what else could there be? And all that I could come up with is Plutotron, who turns into an aqueduct.
Could be the new sea spray.
Like, what else did they have? The Romans had chariots, aqueducts, and straight roads. So
straight Roadatron. Yeah, I think we've covered a bunch of ideas here, and I don't know what else to add. Maybe a pretender line when there weren't any vehicles. I don't know. Do the lords of Britain, pretender
Lord of
lords,
the Rings.
Lord masters. They all have big frilly capes and stuff. There's another question here called question number two. How do you like your Transformers to shoot? By which I mean, do you prefer Transformers to fire lasers, plasma, energon, plasma, magic, space, magic, or conventional metal bullets? Myself, I adhere to the quote-unquote kinetic weapons are just better school of thought. But that is just my stylistic taste. In addition, do you prefer handheld weaponry integrated into the body, or a mixture of the two? Thank you for taking the time to answer my question. P.S. Since this is a totally relevant argument at this point in time, I prefer well-done steak, because I'm a bastard. Thank you, Triceradon. Personally, I don't care what my Transformers shoot, but I do actually, of late, really enjoy a mixture of integrated weaponry and handheld weaponry. Like, make the handheld weapons huge, and make the integrated weapons, like, or handheld weapons either, like, huge things they can't integrate, or stuff that pops out of their body, and then The integrated weapons in Transformers Prime, I think, are a great example of what I'm talking about. Like, just like the hand pops in and then the gun pops out. Great moments like when he's called Optimus Prime is all like, "I'm armed." I like that moment in the beginning of season two. Yeah, that's what I prefer. Seth, what about you?
Yeah, I'm cool with the idea of them having like smaller built-in weapons, like little zappers and whatnot. And then, like, pistols and rifles that are more powerful. But I've always just kind of assumed that they have laser guns of some sort. Like, some kind of energy weapon. Like, I never really thought of them as having bullet-shooting guns like they kind of do in the Bay movies. Because you're dealing with metal. And it seems like it wouldn't be as effective to just throw smaller pieces of metal at a metal enemy as it would to burn it or melt it or cut through it.
Do really hot metal like in the Bay movies.
Okay, hot metal.
Sabo rounds! Hot metal. That's how I learned what a sabo was in the Transformers movie.
In real life we shoot metal projectiles at tanks. But tanks aren't from outer space, so I just always assumed that they had lasers and energy weapons of some manner.
Tanks should be from outer space. Glass guns,
whatever that means.
Glass gas!
And if you think of it, the original Seekers, they had integrated weapons.
That's true.
They're arm guns.
And Gog, how do you feel about the question, and how would you answer it?
I always thought that the whole energy weapon thing made more sense because, like, they're not going to carry around ammunition in their bodies, generally. Like, everything Transformers do is run off of Energon, so, like, you would think the Energon would equal, generally, some sort of type of energy weapon, so that always made more sense to me. But I think when things deviate, it makes it even cooler as long as it's done to a small degree. Like, when you have a bunch of dudes who shoot energy weapons, but then you have one dude who just carries this really awesome badass gun that shoots like a giant bullet, like a handheld cannon or something, like it, that adds personality as well. So I don't mind mixing it up, but I think in general, like, it always made more sense that energy based weapons were the norm as far as Cybertronians go.
I've got a gun and it shoots missiles.
Integrated weapons. I don't know. Like, I think it's part of the personality of the show. Like, I think Prime does a good job with its character designs of having integrated weapons that pop out and still maintain a certain degree of personality. And kind of like I said, with the exception of the rule being cool. Like, look at Dreadwing. Dreadwing doesn't have integrated weapons. At least we never really see him. He doesn't use them. Like, he carries a giant cannon and sword, like, slung onto his back. You know, he's kind of the antithesis of the rest of the characters' philosophy when it comes to weapons. And that makes Dreadwing unique. And while I certainly like the way that the other characters do it, like, that makes Dreadwing kind of stand out as an individual. So I think there's room for both. And it can certainly add character and uniqueness to an individual, but I don't mind it either way. And I don't mind that G1 generally had just handheld guns that they carried around that couldn't even be stored, because that was kind of the personality of the times then. And then you know the movie has its own style and Prime has its own style, and I think it's cool that they mix it up, and it adds an aesthetic. It's aesthetic traits to each piece of the franchise, if you will. So, no, there's room for everything, I think. And I like how each series kind of makes its own use out of it. I kind of like how, like, with classics, like with alternators, like, they were all handheld guns, but they were car parts. So that's kind of like, it's not integrated into the robot mode, but it's more integrated into the vehicle. So,
yeah,
like you had, like, the auto Roopers, like, he had the freaking traffic cones that turn into cannons. Like, that stuff is all really cool, and again, that adds, like, little uniqueness to those lines as well. So, nah, it's cool. I think I like how there's difference, and there's design philosophies that have changed over the times, and it you look back and you can associate those with the lines they belong to. It's all cool.
And it's cool playing with like older figures that have similar but different philosophies like that. Like just messing with Magmatron. He has integrated weaponry, but it's not integrated in the case of like you pull it off and stick it in his hand. It's like he's got the blade that goes into the launcher, and those are made from two different parts, and that piece comes off, turns into the shield. And it's like it's similar but different, which I find quite interesting. So I hope that answered your questions, Mr. Triceradon. We're going to take a quick break, perhaps even an intermissionary break, and then we'll be back with some what we got this week. And I will. I'm not going to repeat what I said at the panel is what I'm going to try to do, except for that one thing. I gotta repeat that one thing. We'll talk to you in a bit.
Hey, this Christmas party is getting a little too quiet. I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift, Mr. Microphone.
Hey, what's that?
Well, you set the dial on your FM radio and... Testing.
I'm on the radio!
These kids are having a fabulous time with Mr. Microphone, the cordless microphone that actually puts your voice on the radio. There are no attaching wires, so you're free to move around. Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
Professional entertainers use Mr. Microphone for rehearsing.
I got one.
I got one.
I got one.
I got one.
I got one. I got Mr. Microphone, and I love it.
It's practical and great fun for the whole family. And it's only $14.88. Mr. Microphone, buy two or three, they really make great Christmas gifts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are representing it hashtag Elite Style here with some what we got this week. Me and Gog talked about some of our what we gots at our TFCon live episode, so that's shrunken our lists considerably. And because of that, I'd like to start with you, Mr. Gog Dog.
Hi. I didn't get anything since then. I take that back. I got my Steel Core today. But I did. There are a couple of things that I did get at TFCon. Most of it I'm not going to talk about, but I wanted to just very briefly elaborate on some of it now that I've actually opened the box. Perfect Effects Scouting Force, Perfect Effects Scouting Force X, the black reflector repaint dudes. I messed with them really briefly, but I didn't want to take all those guns and knives and tiny mounting clips and stuff out at the con, obviously. But since then, I've had a chance to mess with them, and those dudes are awesome. I'm so glad that I finally got a chance to own a set of these guys because they are so cool. I love all the different configurations. Like, you can give the guy like rotary jetpack or combine it into a lens and then put a handle on it. And now he has a giant laser cannon and just so many little options you can do. And, I don't know. It's cool. I'm sure by now everybody who's interested in this has acquired one or has seen it over the last year or two. But I'm really, really, really glad that I got my hands on them. It's a great little set, and it's almost a shame that they haven't done another run of them because I'm sure that there would be some demand. But yeah, there's still some stuff like the Kabaya kits. I haven't even built those yet, so I'll there's still some stuff that I got at TFCon, I think, that I'd like to discuss more later. Apparently, like, after TFCon, like, every online store that still had long racks no longer have long racks, so that's kind of...
Congratulations.
Hilarious. Well, not to me, to the toy, because it's a really cool toy, and like I've been interested in it for a really long time. I'm just overall fascinated with Beast Wars Neo, and so like I got a big convoy at BotCon. Now I got a long rack at TFCon, so maybe I'll just save my Beast Wars Neo purchases to be convention. Purchases, because that's been doing really well for me so far. But no, Long Rack is he's surprisingly cool. Like, Transforming Giraffe, I think I would enjoy that no matter what, but he's a much better toy than I expected. I've had a lot of fun with it. But no, I got my Steel Corps today. You haven't actually... Did you talk about it at all? Not really? I mean, besides your video?
I mean, I talked about it a bit at the panel.
Okay, all right.
And at TFCon, admittedly, that was the most boring place to talk about it because that's where everyone basically got to play with it one way or another.
Right.
But no, it's a fantastic toy. Yeah, I got a review done up because I was going to review some other toys last week, and Steel Corps showed up on Monday before I went out to... Or before you showed up here, and I went out to Kipling for the first of many times. And, yeah, I got distracted all day by Steel Corps, and then I was like... Before I went up to meet up with you, I'd already written half the review because I was like, if I try to continue working on any other toy, I'm just going to be sitting there thinking about Steel Corps. So I'm just going to review Steel Corps. It's a fantastic toy that doesn't do anything amazing or mind blowing. It does a whole bunch of simple stuff really, really well, and is proof that you can do that and have it work.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I would say, and I don't own every Fans Project release by any means. I think I've handled them all though. Like I've handled, the two, what were the two, limb dudes, the first Causality guys?
Oh, Explorer and Munitioner.
Yeah. I handled the repaints of those when, Andy Cobra Commander, bought them at BotCon, of last year in 2011. And those were very great standalone figures. And I have the Insecticons. I've handled the Protector Armor. I'm sure there's a figure out there that I haven't actually touched. But of everything, which is the vast majority of the Fans Project stuff that I've had the opportunity to handle, I would say that this is the first time that they have made a figure that feels like it could be confused with a mass retail Hasbro-style release product. I mean, there's certainly some things here and there that would, you know, would give it away that it isn't. But, like, the joints, the quality of the plastic, all the ball joints, and just everything on it, this feels like something that I could buy at a store. And it would be something that would be widely accepted. And that I that's just how I view this figure. It feels like... Like an amazingly good Voyager toy that you could open from the box, you'd take the tie wraps off, and it would be one of the top five figures of the year. Like it would be the one that everybody would be rushing out to get to find. But it still has that feel. Like it feels to me like a Hasbro figure. You know, with the exception of maybe the way that the waist is designed, but I mean, if this was a Hasbro figure, that waist joint just probably wouldn't exist at all, or at least the ab crunch wouldn't, and then the waist joint would be moved further down so it didn't interfere with the cockpit. With the exception of that small area, like those two joints, like that. Otherwise, this feels like it would be a Hasbro product, and that's a compliment. It's a compliment that you could pick up a figure and would have trouble differentiating it between something along those lines. Like even their Insecticons, the Insecticons are awesome, and it's not a negative to say that they don't feel like a retail figure because they just do lots of small little intricate things that Hasbro probably would be afraid to do for fear of kids just breaking their toys left and right. But it's stuff that, as an adult, I can appreciate. But this just has an aesthetic all of its own. It just feels like an amazing retail quality Voyager, and I like it. I like it a lot. And I got—I mean, the first thing I did when I got to your place is I'm like, "Oh, Steel Corps. Let me see that guy real quick." And transformed him back and forth. But yeah, I mean, I just don't know what to say. With every release that Fans Project creates, I am just incredibly amazed at what an independent company is able to do. And it just further emphasizes what I've been saying lately, in that Fans Project is no longer just a third-party company making cheap passable replicas of characters that we haven't gotten yet, and people are willing to pay expensive money for subpar quality, barely better than garage kits in order to fill a space on a classic shelf. Fans Project is a legitimate toy company in their own right. And they probably have been that way for a while. It's just the quality of their stuff is getting better and better and better. And I'm just, that's why everything that they do, I'm just excited about. The Stunticons, I am excited about. That subline of headmasses that they're doing, I am just super stoked about it, because they are knocking every single thing they do out of the park. And they're doing it for even less money than what other toy companies are charging. Like, look at what you, I mean, how, with the member price, which is, to be fair, is not really a member price as much as just sign up and create an account and you get $10 off the figure. For $70, look at what you get for this for $70, and then look at what you get for $70 from another quote unquote third party company.
Yeah, I mean, I always got to, this is kind of hard to say without like opening up lots of questions, but as far as I understand it, Fans Project are able to do production runs in a method that allows them to run stuff at that more like getting closer to retail price point. They're in a position both with the number of people who will buy their stuff and the factories that they work with, that they're able to do that, I think, more easily than some other companies, which is not to say, like, you know, I'm not trying to nullify the criticism at all that I've seen of, like, why is Fans Project stuff so much less expensive? But that's, as far as I understand it, that is a reason why is, yeah. at the bottom line, people will buy a Fans Project toy when it comes out, and that means they can make more
that's
of them.
But that's also because their reputation precedes them.
Yeah.
So they've earned that, if that's the case.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely. And, absolutely. Yeah.
But no, this is, it's great. It in many ways exceeded my expectations. I'd say maybe, I don't know, like, if I was nitpicking, I'd say, I don't know.
Like, I wish he had wrist joints. That's really all I got.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish that he could rotate his wrists. I wish maybe the wheels were bigger, because the wheels kind of look comically tiny. But then again, there's plenty of legit Transformers toys and characters that have done that, and it's, and I've felt the same way when they did it. So it's, you know, what it is, what it is. But I mean, I would just assume drop the two smaller wheels and just give me one big wheel, you know, in the back, and I think that would look cool, or in the front, I guess, and then similarly in the back. But I guess, like, my only other complaint would maybe be the giant gaping hole when you take the core out. But it, you know,
you're taking the core out of the robot.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal, because it's just like a, you know, a Power Master. Well, actually, not like a Power Master, but like a God Master, which is the Japanese version. It's just, it's basically an empty, and I actually haven't read the comic yet. I was going off of what you were explaining it to me, so maybe I misinterpreted some of it. But it seems to be the Japanese take on Godmasters, in that it's basically just a transtector, which is when the smaller robot plugs in, the smaller robot is now the big robot. And then when it comes out, it's just a empty shell, or just the vehicle that the little dude drives. Is that correct?
That appears to be the case, although okay. I'm going to say they might be doing a little mislead, but I don't know. But yeah, as far as the comic says, it seems that Core Roar, the truck, is entirely empty.
Yeah, and there were hints that in Master Force as well that wasn't 100% the case. Like, when Jin Rai found the Optimus Prime Transtector, it was referred to as being alive, but it never really showed signs of being, like, an autonomous thing. I mean, maybe, like, some hints here and there, but, so it seems to very much be, you know, like, a take on the whole Godmaster thing. But with the Power Master, it was actually two separate characters. Like, you had Power Master Prime and you had Haikyuu. So it seems to be more of the Japanese take on it, which, you know, that's fine. So, I mean, maybe it would have been a little cooler if that hole was just like an indention and he plugged into it. But, you know, really minor complaint. But, I'm, no, Nothing more I can say about it. I'm just and the figure is just rock solid. Like the leg joints, the tolerances in all the ball joints are perfect. The ankle joints are just the ball jointed ankles are fine. It can hold any pose that I put it into. It's great. Like, and again, like the other just the tiny nitpick is like, what can you do with the green thing? Like, I wish that, you know,
we figured some stuff out. I found there is actually a really solid way for it to lock underneath the vehicle mode.
Fall
out if you bang the vehicle mode, but
yeah, I've seen that. PR very excitedly showed me that, like at the table in the lobby. He's like, look. I kind of wish that there was more of an like a official integration, but it's such a minor thing. It's like, who cares? Because everything else is just done so well. But no, I continue to follow Fans Project and see what they continue to knock out, because it's just they are, like I said, and I've said before, and I'll say it again, they are a legitimate standalone toy company that can create their own products and just be terrific. So, but no, he's good. If you don't have one,
be reissues.
There will be reissues. Everyone should stop freaking out. There will be tons of this guy, and probably even more runs in the future in different colors with a different name.
Yeah.
In a different head sculpt. So you will have your opportunity to get your hands on this. But if you haven't and you're waffling and you don't think $70 is too much to pay for a really good Voyager toy from a third party, then the next time this pops up, you should jump on a pre-order, because I do not think that you will be dissatisfied.
And they are working on things to add to it, as far as we know. They want Korver to be the quote-unquote core of both their original fiction and a bunch of add-on parts they want to try doing, as far as we've heard. So, be excited. I don't know. Anything else you want to talk about that you got this week?
On topic? No, that's it.
All right. Mr. Seth Buzzard, tell me about your on topic, what we got this week.
I only got one thing. And I wasn't really even expecting it to show up. While at TFCon, one of those pre-order goons, one of those ne'er-do-wells from Pre-Order 66, I think Jared or something like that.
Who?
Might be his name. I don't know. I think he's some kind of a doctor.
I don't know about that.
Like, I don't know. It's probably like those people who have like doctorates and something that isn't medical. It's probably one of those deals. But he picked up it's Impossible Toys, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Impossible Toys Alicon. I think, if I remember correctly, I have all of the Quintessons that Impossible Toys had done in the past. So, had to get Alicon, and he was able to score it for me for a nice price. So, much appreciated there, Dr.
Jared.
Using such derision. I don't know. There's no reason for that. It's being an ass. But, so he arrived today. I didn't think it would make it in time. But it did. So I've been messing with it a little bit on and off while we've been recording here. Transformed it to alligator robot, a con mode, and then back to robot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't remember Impossible Toys ever doing a transforming figure before.
This is their first one, and guess who designed it? And you guess who designed it? I'll tell you who designed it. That was the second ever transforming robot design that Venksta did. We learned that when he walked up to me and Jared while we were messing with it and said, "Oh, that's the second design I ever did." And we were like, "What?" Apparently the first design he did is something Impossible Toys is still working on releasing, which is that Seeker thing they were showing. So that's interesting. But yeah, it's the first thing that Impossible Toys has done that transforms, as far as I can recall, aside from their RC. which was Nightbird, which did not turn out very well. So actually, it's the second thing they ever released that could transform. I was mistaken.
Yeah. I kind of wish I didn't know who made it. Because, you know, I'm not critical of it, but I'm going to point out some aspects of it.
I got things I can say about it, too, after you're done.
Yeah. So, it kind of, I mean, when you put it with all the other Impossible Toy stuff, I think it fits fine. I think it would fit in really well with a G1 collection.
Yep.
Because it really has that kind of chunk to it that the, like, 86 post-movie era Transformers had. So I think it fits in just fine with all that stuff. It has more articulation than that era, for sure. But just, like, the transformation is pretty simple. It's big, chunky design, which fits with what it is. I mean, that's... It's pretty damn accurate. But it's not competing with any of the more elaborate third-party stuff we've seen lately. And, you know, it doesn't need to either. It is what it is. And for being what it is, I think it's good. I kind of wish there was something more you could do with its tail when it's in robot mode. I kind of wish its tail didn't seem so flat and hollow all the time in all modes. It's kind of disappointing that you have to pull out two of his shoulder spikes.
Apparently, the original Vengsta design did something differently, but then that change happened in part to facilitate the weapon, apparently, from what I was hearing.
Well, I'm not sure how the weapon benefits.
Basically, by removing those two spikes, you can attach them to the bottoms of the two longer parts of the staff and then make him... So now it's like two small spiked staffs that the alligator can wave around, which looks really funny. It's like an alligator trying to do, like, martial arts with a pair of sticks.
Well, then why not just not have little spikes on the bottom and have them more like maces, because there's spikes all the way around as well as it being a pointed spear. Anyway.
Bath salts.
All right. I would have rather not have had to pull those bits out than have something to plug onto the bottom of his sticks. So, but, you know, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. And this is really your only option. If you always wanted an Alicon from the 86 movie, I mean, here it is. Deal with it. I mean, I'm happy to have it. Like, I enjoy having all those Impossible Toy Quintessons, and this guy will go right along with them. So, yeah, glad to have it. Just don't expect, you know, really advanced engineering. Like, think of it more as a little bit better G1 era toy, and that's where your expectation should be.
To expand on that, literally the plastic, and this isn't a slag on it at all, the plastic feels like that glossier, chunkier plastic that 80s toys were made of. Like, right down to having that weird, like, shiny mold finish look on it. Yeah. Which I actually enjoyed. That's part of what drew me to it, because I was like, it looked so 80s, right down to, like, the head sculpt of the robot. I was like, all right, I dig it. And I like the way that it's engineered, mostly. Like, I agree, I wish I didn't have to pull the spikes off, but, you know, it is a very moot thing. I actually bought this for one main reason, which is I got to mess with the prototype before I bought it. And Impossible Toys is another one of those companies, and I always refer to to Mastermind when I talk about this. They're a company where the last thing they put out, it was pretty dire, and their reputation kind of got, you know, thrown in the toilet. That being the RC that they released, the Valkyrie, which was done as Nightbird a couple TFCons ago. That thing was... It wasn't abysmal, but it was basically a mess. I don't know if that really explains it very well, but it did not turn out very good at all. A lot of things were wrong with it on a construction level. And the Alicon, the thing that I really liked the most messing with the prototype is it didn't feel like it was going to break in my hands. And that that combined with the fact that I am that guy who, as a kid, always wanted the toy of the Alicons from the movie because I thought they looked really cool.
Yeah, I was really... I didn't understand... Like, I never understood why there wasn't.
Yeah.
And why there wasn't Quintessons.
Yeah, I never did either. I always wanted toys of them, and the Alicon especially because it transformed, and I got it. And I think it's a cool toy. There's only a few little issues that you need to be aware of with this thing, though, and that's that the construction of this thing is better than anything I've seen from Impossible Toys, but there are still things to watch out for. Mostly, I think, in assembly. That's where the problems happen, when this is built in the factory. Like, on the tail of mine, there's a little bit of a stress mark on the hinge, or the plastic right below the hinge, on one of the hinges of the tail. And the most egregious thing is that there is a metal pin that runs through the plate that the robot head is resting upon. Like, there's a kind of like a plate that has the ball joint on it. On mine, the plate's crooked because in assembly, the pin was shoved in there kind of crookedly, and there's actually, like, the plastic that encases the pin on one part is literally shredded open in a really nasty-looking way that, thankfully, is more or less hidden when you look at the toy. I say these things with the caveat that pretty much my copy of the toy works fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It doesn't have problems transforming. I did have to trade it because the rivets on the shark neck joints were messed up on the first one I got. They were preventing the green hinge from working. Basically, it's a fine toy. I think it's actually pretty cool. But while their construction has improved, Impossible Toys still does have a few issues in what's coming out of their factory. And so you need to be aware of some of that stuff when you're messing with it and be prepared to need to ask for a replacement if some stuff isn't working right. At least in my minimal experience of seeing four copies of this toy, of the four copies, I had one where it didn't have a... I saw one where the neck joint didn't work, and then the second one which is the second one I got, has these other problems I have. Jared's, as far as I know, was completely fine. Seth's sounds like it's completely fine. So,
well, Jared had even offered to open it up and give it a look.
Yeah.
Which I thought, well, if you think that is something that should happen, then yeah, totally go ahead and do that.
Then do it yourself too. If you get a chance to buy this in person, like, open it up and look at it.
Yeah, let me tweet this picture at you because I hadn't noticed, and then when you were starting to talk about that pin issue, I started looking around, and everything looks in there pretty straight. It's just it looks like at one end it got a little chewed up.
Okay.
But yeah, I didn't even notice that until you started talking about it. On my tail, one of the segments I can't get it completely flat.
Yeah.
And I can't get it completely flat. Like, I can curl it up more, but I can't flatten it all the way out without putting more pressure than I feel comfortable on trying to put on it.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to let it be. But otherwise, it seems fine.
Yeah.
But and here, I tweeted that image at you, so.
That's kind of the crux of the Alicon, is I think it's a sign of good growth, but it's not where the growth needs to stop. Like, it's doing okay. Oh, yeah, that's kind of like the problem on mine. Mine's even more chewed up than that. But, if Impossible Toys can really just get a grip on their factory, that whatever it is that they're using, and just ensure that less and less of these this is all assembly issues. Like, these all look like things that happened in the assembly of the toy. So all they need to do is just tighten up even more on their figures getting assembled, and I think they will actually be a pretty good third-party company. Like, definitely a niche one, but aside from the assembly issues, the Alicon is, I think, fantastic. It has a cool, neat little transformation. It feels like an 80s toy that has been just softly improved. It's got a great alt mode. It's got a great robot mode. It's nicely posable. I like what they did with the weapons, where you have, like, that little centerpiece that stores inside the mouth, and then you can attach other things on it to make, like, the staff. The one
piece in the mouth makes the inside of the mouth more interesting. It looks like he has a little tongue.
Yeah, exactly. And the only other thing to really look out for is that when you do assemble the staff, the pegs on that little piece inside the mouth are a little bit too wide, and they can actually stretch the holes on the staff pieces wide enough that the spike parts won't really sit in there too happily, especially if you twist stuff. Just be careful with that. Maybe file down very slightly the pegs on the central piece, or just thicken the pegs on the spikes. If you like the Alicon and you're like me and you always wanted one, I'd say at least try to get a look at one in person. I don't think this is a crappy release at all. I think that Impossible Toys made strides with this, and I hope they can take feedback like this in the right way and in the good way and continue improving, because I think that they're onto something really cool.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it is, as a transforming figure, it's not competing with the other big third-party companies, like, you know, Make Toys and all them, and yeah. It doesn't have to, because it's going for a whole different aesthetic. Like, it looks definitely at a glance like it came out of the 80s, except for if this came out in the 80s, it would have been the best Transformer that had ever been made, because no other Transformer has the articulation this thing has.
Yeah,
but like, you could put it on a shelf with the other 86 line, and I think it's going to fit in just fine. So if that's what you're looking for, this guy fills that role, you know, spot on. If you're looking for something more high end, to use that term in air quotes, that's not what this is. So
yeah,
come at it with the right expectation and you'll be satisfied. Come at it assuming it's something else and you're not.
Yeah. And if it's not your thing, that's fine. Like, this is a very niche item.
Pass on it.
Yeah. But for the people looking for this kind of thing, like, I gotta say, like, Impossible Toys did good. This isn't necessarily a comeback on the level of Nightmare for Annihilator, but to me, this is still a pretty damn good comeback. This is the kind of comeback I want to see out of Zovergen whenever they release their next toy. So I'm really happy for Impossible Toys, because I think that they're on the route to recovery from Valkyrie, and that's what I wanted to hear. I was worried, because I had, like, not heard anything from them for like a year or two. So I was like, did they just kind of stop? And then they showed up in force at TFCon. So good job, guys. You did good. I completely forgot you. Oh, I was going to tell you. Sorry. I saw someone transform one of the prototypes, and they folded the tail in the robot mode all the way up over the top of the back of the guy and down behind his head, and it kind of worked.
Yeah, I tried that. I thought it looked weird.
I did too.
But I'll just in case. Let it drag. And also, it just wanted to flop back down anyway.
Yeah. Cool.
It's fine.
Is that your on topic?
Yep, that's it.
All right. I'm going to talk about my on topics. Stuff that I talked about getting at TFCon but hadn't actually opened, I have since opened. So I'd like to talk about Magmatron first. That's a really cool toy. I think $60 really is the top price you should pay for it. Try to find it for $40 or $50 if you can. It's a really cool piece of engineering from 1999. I actually found that after like over 10 years of hype about how tricky that guy is to transform, I found him, especially for a Neo toy, really simple to transform. The Dino Orgy mode was just, I figured that out in like 3 minutes with the instructions, tops. He's cool. He is not very poseable, but he's more poseable than he seems. It's really just his arms that drag everything down, but he's got presence. He's very unique. And unless you just, like, I don't know. I think he's something that any long-term collector should probably just pick up for the sake of at least trying out the toy at some point. Like, once you've hit a wall, or once you're like, I don't know what to do with Transformers, at least say that you got Magmatron and you tried him out. Much like you should say that you've tried transforming Mach Kick or stuff like that. I kind of dig him. So thanks, GogDog, for recommending him. I dig the purchase. And yep. Alongside him, I purchased the Perfect Effect Motobot RC in pink for basically $60, which is the best deal ever, because I like this toy a lot, but I'm really happy I didn't have to go triple digits on it. This is a fantastic figure with only one problem, and that problem is the first time you fold up the legs, it's possibly the most frightening experience I've had with a toy in recent memory. Here's my recommendation. When you're folding up the legs, there's a little nub, and it's got to go farther than it looks like it's able to go. and you have to push really hard. So make sure you're pushing on only the biggest part you need to push on. Fold the foot all the way out of the way and just figure out how very carefully pop the kneecap and the silver bar on her ankle. Just pop them off. Otherwise, when it finally goes for the first time, the sheer amount of force you're doing may just, like, push your finger right up and snap those parts, like, off. Once you get through that terrifying first transformation, it's a lot smoother every time afterwards. And so I really love this figure now. I think the transformation's fantastic. The kneecap rotation to lock the knees in place is amazing. The parts forming is actually quite minimal, I'm finding. It's really not as bits and pieces as I thought it was. It's definitely a lot cleaner and less finicky than the Scouting Force is. The posability on the toy is very well done. The metal really helps on the legs. The look is great. I love the fact that her RC layup buns compress into her head when she transforms. The accessories are well done, and this is a perfect partner piece if you've got Ninja, Perfect Effects Rosanna, because the handlebars actually have a, like, they taper off, so the handlebars have a thickness to them, but on the ends, they're slightly thinner to accommodate the fist holes on Ninja, and it looks perfect riding this thing. Perfect Effect RC, I think, is definitely one of the nicest third-party releases I've messed with in a long time. It's no Steel Core, but nothing else really is right now. But it's a lot more solid than I thought it was going to be. The only problem I have with it now, aside from the terrifying first transformation, is that yellow visor piece on mine, it doesn't even friction in. Like, I push it in, and then it kind of, like, pops itself back out a little ways, and then just kind of holds in place through, like, force of will. I feel like something's wrong in there. Maybe I need to file some plastic down, but... that's really the only bummer of the set for me so far is the little visor, and I don't need the little visor, to be honest. It's a great toy otherwise. Definitely recommend it if you can get it for a good price. Try not to pay too much over $100 for it if you can, because that'll make it hurt. If you can find one and do some haggling for under $100, it's only going to be a nicer experience. Just be friggin' careful the first time you transform it. And even though I successfully did it without breaking anything, The second leg I folded up still gouged flesh out of my thumb and index finger to the point of blood, which is funny because right behind me, Aaron was doing his first Cyclops transformation, and Cyclops had just taken some of his blood with its pointy shin bits, and I laughed at him and then got cut by RC. And Jared was sitting there playing with the United version of that awful G2 Megatron Classics mold, and he was just like, "My toy's not dangerous." And I was like, "Yeah, but your toy sucks." So I highly recommend that RC. And again, this is going to give thanks in the other direction. Seth, I have to thank you for talking up the Perfect Effect RC so much, because it pushed me to want to purchase it, and I think it's one of the best purchases I've made all year. It's a great toy. It's really, really expressive.
So, yeah, it's awesome. I don't know how you bled yourself off of it, though.
Well, you know how hard... Did you have a hard time folding up the legs the first time?
Oh, yeah, but yeah, I didn't cut myself on it.
Yeah, I didn't cut myself on the first ones, but the second ones, I think that the knuckle of my index finger and the side of the knuckle of my thumb just, like, hit one of the pointy bits and got, like, sandwiched between them. It was an experience. But, yeah, once you get over that first transformation, it's great.
I see PR tweeting a bunch today about how much he's loving it, too, so I guess he owes me some thanks also.
He better. All right, you know, by gum, we'll deal with him next GF Con.
Yeah, we'll fix his
motorboat
wagon.
I'm just looking down my little list here. I also picked up some Repro labels. I got the Repro labels for Prime Knockout and Prime Ratchet. And the Prime Knockout Repro labels have a really cool feel to them. I'm looking forward to applying them. Apparently, they use the same vinyl as actual car stickers. So apparently it's super durable and super stretchy and really good at conforming to curves. When I picked up Alicon, the fine dealer whose name may or may not have to do with a rhino, he threw in the Impossible Toys Spike and Spark Plug, the tiny, tiny yellow hard-headed Spike and Spark Plug who come with extremely tiny wrenches. I haven't opened them. Oh, how are they? I haven't opened mine up yet.
They're really tiny.
Oh.
They don't really do much, but they look awesome inside a G1 Optimus Prime chest.
Excellent. I just want to stand them with some Transformers for scale and make things look crazy. I got to throw out some thanks here. Three people, and I only remember one of them as being Deathformer. The other two I can't remember because drinking. But three people gave me their foam runamucks from the Transformers Collectors Club Overrun. So I've saved some more foam runamucks from the trash bin. And I have a plan for them. Also, just the other day, I was at a comic shop, and what I've been talking about finally came to pass. I saw a graphic novel of Transformers comics that I'd missed. I still haven't read Chaos, but I saw the Volume 1 graphic novel for Robots in Disguise and decided to pick it up. And I kind of dug what I was reading, and I was really bummed that they didn't have the graphic novel for More Than Meets the Eye, because I hear that that is the top-tier comic to read right now. So I'm going to keep my eyes open for that and for the Chaos trades, so I can...
Don't say anything! Yeah, I'm still... God, I am so far behind.
I am still
buying books and still not reading them. I have, like...
Oh.
I got to
get the Chaos trades because I read the first volume of Robots in Disguise and they referenced all this stuff that I had no idea what they were talking about. And then I was like, oh, wait, there was a miniseries before this miniseries. So I got to go and find those trades so I can fill in my gaps. But Robots in Disguise, I quite enjoyed. I can see parts of it that would possibly make some people get mad, but I felt it was an effective enough little story, and it played off of a lot of cool characterizations. The IDW Prowl was doing all the stuff that I remember him doing in the Spotlight comic. So it was cool. Now I just gotta find More Than Meets the Eye, and I've seen just scenes from More Than Meets the Eye. It looks like a really fun book. So I know the first trade, it was advertised in the back of the Robots in Disguise trade, so I'm just gonna assume it's out there somewhere. So I gotta track that down. But that does it for my on-topic what we got this week. Mr. Seth Buzzard, tell me about your off-topic what we got this week.
Off-topic, not so much toys, but equipment.
Uh-oh.
So I got a new computer. It is damn quiet. So for a while now at work, we've been getting these kind of summertime bonus, they've been calling it, in the form of a Costco gift card. And I never spent my card from last year. And we just, a couple weeks ago, got our cards this year. So I've been wanting to get a computer, my old one. What year did Half-Life 2 come out?
Oh, God.
2004.
Yeah.
That's how old it is.
Oh!
I finished putting it together just before Half-Life 2 came out. And it was built specifically to handle Doom 3. Like, that's... Like, my friend Jason helped me. And we assembled all the parts. Like, built the whole thing from the ground up. Nothing was assembled, bought every component individually, built the whole thing to handle Doom 3. So that's how old that thing is. So it has now been replaced. So, you know, it's not super high-end computer. It was like the $500 Acer at Costco. But like in comparison, like this thing, where like my old computer, the motherboard could only handle 1 gig of RAM. This has 6. It has a 2 terabyte hard drive. It has all the USB ports I could want, or without having to use multiple USB routers. And where my old one had, let's see, 5 fans. Like, this has 2. One of them, like, the main fan is gigantic, so it doesn't have to spin real fast, so it's, like, whisper quiet. It's pretty nice. I'm liking it. I haven't really done anything to it to really, like, push to see how far it could work graphically. Like, I downloaded Arma 2, which I got from the Steam summer sale for, like, $20. That included the expansion pack. The whole point of getting Arma 2 is to play DayZ. and jump through some hoops to get that working. And I don't know if it's the game engine or the computer can't handle it. I haven't had much time to tweak it. But it's not the smoothest, nicest looking graphics I've seen. It could be the engine. I gotta figure it out. Maybe try loading up another game where I know what to expect graphically. But you know, I didn't really get it to be a gaming machine. I basically got it to be the thing that I mostly do the podcast on and internet stuff and manage my iTunes for all the podcasts I listen to and, you know, stuff like that, like pretty basic stuff. And I definitely wanted to get a new computer before Windows 8 came out because, man, I'm not too enthusiastic about what I'm hearing in that regard.
Oh, dear.
So this has Windows 7, and it's going to be fine. Then the other thing I got, I haven't told anybody about. This arrived yesterday. I'm going to tweet this image at you guys. I'm a little disappointed that you, that neither one of you noticed anything while we've been recording. So I tweeted a picture to you.
Hang on.
Both of you.
What did you do?
I leveled up.
You leveled up.
I got a Blue Yeti microphone.
I am really happy. I am really happy. That's me being happy. That's awesome!
And then I got it in a bundle from Amazon, so it came with some of the headphones that I'm not using right now. I'm still using my old headphones. And a pop filter. And I think Aaron had gotten the same deal, because I remember him talking about getting a pop filter with his.
Yep.
That doesn't actually attach at all, or in any good way. Like, you kind of got to, like, just sort of jam it in there sort of a way.
Yeah.
But I found it attaches really great to the edge of my desk. So I mounted the pop filter to the desk, and it reaches up and goes where it's supposed to go. That's pretty good.
If it makes you feel better, I keep my headphone volume turned on pretty low, so I probably wouldn't have noticed much now, but during the editing process, I'll probably notice it a great deal.
Can we have a pop filter pop off? Like, just get your mouth right up close and go pop, 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 pop.
No, I did that after I set up the pop filter.
Uh-huh.
I just started recording and watching the waveform going, pop filter, a pop filter, and then I moved it away and kept doing my little stupid pop filter chant, and man, that waveform got big and ugly as soon as I pulled it away. I'm like, pop filter works pretty damn good.
Pop filter, yeah, I like pop filters.
And like glad this, to see it's them. It's really cool on this microphone how it has the different settings, like the omnidirectional and the stereo setting, and like it's got those four settings. I think that's a pretty darn neat feature.
Yeah. When you level up microphones, you see all kinds of wonderful new toys to mess with in terms of the microphone functionality.
I want now is a stand where I could hang it down on an adjustable arm with a shock mount.
Yes, and then you can hit your desk as much as you want. Nothing will come of it.
If I touch anything on my desk, and while editing GogDog, you'll probably hear some of that noise. But I've been trying to minimize it and work the mute button. But yeah, I touch anything on my desk, and there's a little rumbly sound gets picked up.
I need to get a new mic stand, because my mic stand's all busted up right now. So it only really works when it's standing like vertical. And that means that my chair, like, especially tonight, my chair has bumped into the stand a couple times. And I was like, oh, no!
I'm tired, man. I worked all day. And if I could have this microphone sort of hanging down so I could really
lean back
with my feet up, and that would be so great.
I lean back.
I'm leaning back with my feet up now, but when it's time to talk, I kind of got to lean. I got to lean over too and kind of wrench my neck a little bit to get close enough to the mic.
Yeah.
To be picked up. So it's all about getting this set up to a point where I can lay down and do the podcast.
That would be too decadent. Because what happens if you fall asleep? We'll be picking up your snoring.
I'll have one servant peeling grapes for me that could keep me awake.
Another
servant fanning me that could keep me awake. Give me a little swat with the fan if I fall asleep.
I just felt like I really hit the top level that I was aiming for when I was able to just hit my desk like that and not cause the microphone to detonate.
Now the odd team is all big time microphone.
Leveled up.
So
we can hit our desk. Yeah.
Ball's in your court.
Let's Blue Yeti this. Come on. We need to take over. We need to rise up, Blue Yeti up. I'm really glad that you picked up that microphone. It's when you do podcasting,
it's gonna make the editing process go by a lot.
Yes. Too,
because some of the headsets I was having, or I had before, over time, my headset was slowly going out of sync. So like every 20 minutes or so, yep, I had to go in and split the track and kind of offset it a bit. And like with yours, Seth, it kind of does that a bit, but it's not as bad as mine used to be. But like every half hour, I have to go in and just kind of adjust it by about half of a second. So I'll go over some settings with you and literally because once I switch to the Blue Yeti, I literally only have to adjust my track once every 3.5 hours, if that. So the majority of the podcast now, once I line it up at the beginning of the show, there will be literally no editing I'll have to do for the remainder of it. I'll just have to check it at hour intervals and just to check, and it'll be done in 10 seconds. And that's going to be really nice for me.
And you know how much happier an editor is when they only have to do that? So much happier.
And that little kind of whistling, squealing sound I'd been struggling with since we started this whole thing. I don't hear it.
Nullified.
I did some... I was hoping it would go away with the new computer. But when I set up my little mix board and my cheap microphones, it still happened. So then I went, you know what? I'm biting the bullet. I'm just going to go for it. Amazon Prime 2-day shipping. I will get this by Wednesday. So I'll have a day to get it set up and ready to go. So I just went for it.
Eventually, we'll all be in the future with our futuristic video phone calling stuff that works even better than whatever we have now, and you'll be happy you have a good microphone, because then you'll be the high-class citizen having your high-class phone calls over the internet.
Yeah, and, you know, I had to run a noise filter to get rid of that little squealy noise. So that either one of you wouldn't have to. And so, you know, that's one less step to do. Now all I'll have to do is export and upload. And
I love it when the process gets simplified.
Well, there's only one more person that isn't a simpleton.
Now we have to unload the peer pressure. I'm ready for it.
I'll leave that in your hands.
I can hit the desk. Me and Aaron both know how to... We can hit our desks. We're set.
I'm going to try hitting my desk. I haven't tried.
Oh, God.
I don't like it.
Ooh.
I guess that didn't sound good on your end.
It sounded kind of... It didn't sound loud, but it sounded internal.
Yeah. But, look, I'm just going to... My fingertips are on my desk. A good 5 inches from the actual microphone, and now I'm going to slide them back and forth across my desk. I don't know if you're hearing that, but yeah, I see it.
I'm going
to. I got to figure out how to make that not happen.
Those are my fingers on my mic stand. This is my whole hand on my mic stand. I'm just going to grind up and down here.
Well, I'm going to...
This is weird.
I'm going to adjust the angle of the Yeti.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't even want to touch it.
All right, well, congratulations.
I need it to dangle over my head.
I need a new mic stand so I can do that. I might end up saving up and then just like eating the cost on a much more expensive mic stand that has tougher joints than the one I have where all the screws stripped within about 6 months. Because this thing sucks. The China Ultra.
Oh, and then one toy thing I did get, Noise Maze from the boards. He's one of those Lego guys, like one of those big-time Lego guys.
Ooh.
So he got, like, all those Avenger sets, which left him with an extra Loki. And he had tweeted something like, now I have two Lokis, and I went, and I don't need two Lokis. And I went, I got no Lokis, so he sent me his extra Loki. So I have a Lego minifig Loki and an Iron Man. Captain America, which I had gotten before. I got the little kit that comes with Captain America.
Nice.
So. I got Loki.
Hooray!
But he came with a rifle.
Loki?
Yeah.
Why?
That seemed weird. You'd think he'd come with his magic heart stick.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize, maybe you guys already realized this and already knew. I didn't realize watching it, but the Loki magic stick, the gem in the top pointy spear part was it's one of the Infinity Gems.
What? I hadn't noticed it at all.
That's what I've been informed. That it's the mind gem, I think they said.
Oh, and that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. But does it though? Because they already showed the Infinity Gauntlet in the first Thor movie already assembled.
Was it assembled? Were all the gems in it? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well, maybe something happens.
Loki went and stole it. The Chitauri went and stole it.
Yeah, there's a... I saw a rumor on... the next Thor movie, the villain. I forgot who the actor is, though. Damn. But it's like Malachor the Damned. It's like a evil dark elf or something.
Oh, I remember that name vaguely.
I think I got the name wrong, but it's something like that.
It's like Melchior or something like that.
Yeah, Melchior or the
Melchior
or other.
Malachor.
Yeah.
Shibamura Prime.
I mean, I'll be surprised if one of the gems isn't part of that storyline.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised if any gems that don't get covered in other movies aren't part of the Guardians of the Galaxy storyline. It seems pretty clear that's where this whole thing's going.
I'm cool with that. I like the Infinity Gauntlet. Did you do anything else off-topic-tatably?
No, just that Walking Dead game.
I want to pick that up.
It's great.
I haven't read anything else about it.
Tell you about what's so great about it later if you want. Ooh. But, you know, it's not that this isn't a video game show, guys.
We're crying out loud.
Transformer show.
Let's talk about more things that are off-topic from Transformers.
Yeah, guys.
Mr. Gogdog, do you have anything off-topic to talk about?
I don't think so. I'm going to go with no.
All right.
Just because.
I got a few little things just to talk about. A couple more things I forgot to mention that I got at TFCon. PR, Middleman, me, Thanos, Adam Warlock... 2-pack from Marvel Universe. I haven't opened it yet, but the Thanos looks gorgeous with the new head sculpt. Also, from Mr. Ichabod, he middleman me a new TMNT Shredder, which is a neat figure, even though its legs are highly unposable, aside from the ball-jointed hips, because that's literally the only joint on the legs. It stands really cool. Can't hold his accessories that well. I think I got to do the whole, like, hair dryer bend and run under cold water trick to tighten the grip he has so he can hold his sword a bit better. But it's got a neat sculpt. So I kind of dig it. He also gave me an Iz from Shocker Toys. Strange line that released here and there. He'd sent me a Scud the Disposable Assassin some time ago, and then just recently found the Iz that came with it, so he brought that over. And in that, he also added in something. I guess he just didn't want it anymore. And it's cool, because I think it's kind of neat. I never picked up any of these things myself. This is from a Bugman show. It's a robot hamburger. And what he gave me was a small version, like from a magazine pack-in, and it was the small, like, kind of candy kit version done in clear plastic. And the image I shared with you guys doesn't actually show what it turns into. So this is the DX one, but it pretty much transforms the same. It's a metal hamburger that turns into a little robot that can spy on people. So it kind of fills you with paranoia about hamburgers because they might be watching what you're doing. And it's cool.
Hamburgers don't last long enough around me to watch what I'm doing.
Oh, jeez. I also like that it's called Burger Meal. I think that's a funny name, because whenever I say burger meal, in my head, I say bugger meal, and I find that really funny. What? I also, at TFCon...
I think it's funny because I think of something else that's funny.
Yes. at TFCon, I got a mysterious bag of toys. I don't know who left it. All they said was that they were an anonymous from Toy. And it was a bunch of, it was four Kamen Rider Dragon Knight toys, the American show that aired a couple years ago. The image I'll link with you guys is one of the four figures, and it's by far the most amusing one. That's supposed to be Stephen Lunsford in his human form with a dragon. Stephen Lunsford does not look like that. He is not that well cut. And it's a dinky, silly looking little toy, and I kind of love that I have it. But Kamen Rider Dragon Knight was a toy line that had some neat ideas, but it got Bandai'd about as hard as Thundercats did, perhaps even harder. So it was a short-lived line that was actually really hard to find in parts of Canada. So now I have an example of it. Hooray! Also, this is playing off of something I mentioned. I forgot if it was last week or at the live podcast. HLJ sent me bike that turns into a thing that looks kind of like the ED-209. But I didn't have its driver, so I'd recently went on eBay and I grabbed the figure of its driver, which is Kamen Rider Kaiza, and the thing looks really cool when he's riding on it and when he's like standing on top of the big mech form. The cool thing though is I got this. I think the eBay seller was Anime King, and I opened up the box and I was greeted. The toy was wrapped in a piece of paper, and then on the top of the printout was a screen cap of my Agito figure with the red color filter screaming about its rage hands, and then on the bottom it said something about do a review of the toy, blah, blah, blah. So that was neat. I didn't know that eBay seller had seen stuff I did until I opened up the box, and then I was like, did I buy this from someone? So thank you, Anime King? I'm going to go look that up. And yeah, now I've got a big transforming SICKT bike, and it's got pretty colors. It turns into a kind of rear-legged ED-209 deal with a sidecar. The final thing I got off topic this week, and I haven't put it together yet, was the Ninja Turtle 2012 Shell Razor, the new turtle van, bought almost entirely due to Mr. Piaw's video showing the silly action feature, which I did already try out, where you push a button on the top of the thing, the side door blows open, a Ninja Turtle comes out holding onto a bar, and then spins around a bunch of times and kicks in the face whoever was stupid enough to stand next to the blow-apart door. The thing's big. It's you could probably keep the entire first wave of Ninja Turtle toys inside of it. It's got stickers and, like, minor assembly. So, it's cool. It's kind of expensive. In Canada, it's close to $40. I believe in the States, it's like it's close to $30. But it's big, and it's basically like a subway car that has, like, in the show, apparently the wheels on it can, like, fold down so it can drive around. On the toy, they don't really fold. They just kind of chill out there. But that's the aesthetic it's going for, is a small subway car. So I kind of dig it. I haven't tried out any of the other Ninja Turtle vehicles. I know, GOG, we were kind of briefly talking about stuff like that. I think I saw at TFCon the $10 Donatello bike you were talking about, but the seller...
I'm more interested in that just because it's... I mean, it looks cool, but it's really affordable, so I've been waiting to hear from... I haven't really sought out any reviews. I'm sure there's some out there, but...
That bike was not affordable at TFCon, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it was... Yeah. Well, I saw somebody selling it for $25.
Someone was selling the April O'Neil from the new Ninja Turtles for $25.
Oh, God.
That's what I said. but yeah, the Shellraiser's neat. I mean, I feel if this is all I get for the line, I feel satisfied because I have a big turtle van. I can put my four turtles and Shredder inside of it, and I've got four turtles and Shredder so they can fight. If that's all that ever comes out of this Playmates line, then at least I'll have the main characters and the main villain, and I'll be set. I'm really hoping, fingers crossed, that versions of these characters who are not the turtles but are as poseable as these four turtles come out in future waves, because all these things being at the same price point makes no sense to me. It feels like they put everything, it feels like they priced it by case and then took budget out of the other toys and put that budget into the turtles, is how it feels to me. I that doesn't make any sense given how toy production works, but I don't know Playmate practices very well, so I hope more actually poseable figures come out of the line, because I will definitely collect those, but Shredder is as close as I'm willing to step right now to the less poseable side of it. And that's all I got this week. So I think that we're good to go for this episode of WTF at TFW. 211. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 318-775-9830. That's 318-775-9830. That is 318-775-9830. And it's a Google voicemail box, so we're not actually going to physically pick up the phone. So my apologies if you're hoping for that. Unless, actually, why would you hope for that? That'd be awkward if you just called in and somehow, no matter where we were able to pick up that number. That'd be strange.
What if that can be arranged.
Really?
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
I want to answer the hotline while I'm sitting on the can. Can that be arranged?
Yes.
I like this idea. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Gog, and thank you, Seth, for joining me here today. We'll be back to talk about more Transformers. We are like, what, 3 weeks out? Pretty much from all of us probably getting to play Fall of Cybertron, just under 3 weeks out.
Mm-hmm.
So, see how that goes. Hey, we're also about 3 weeks out from the return of Transformers Prime. See how that goes. Until then, bye bye. And I'm gonna guess. Stop.
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.